The latest inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2019. It's the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, the Honky Tonk Man.
But if they did ask me, would I go in? That Hall of Fame is a bunch of bullshit. It's not a Hall of Fame, for Christ's sakes.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered the street!
You like fighting a woman?
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Come over here and fight me!
Delete! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
I was really sorry to hear about Luke Perry having a stroke this week. I know he's a big WWE fan. He filmed some stuff even for the first season of the Edge and Christian show on the WWE Network. His son wrestles independently as Jungle Boy, which I had no idea about before this week. I had no idea that Jungle Boy was Luke Perry's son. He was seen quite a bit in the crowd during a lot of his son's matches. And his son was actually offered a contract by AEW back in January. I don't know if he accepted it or not, but there's conflicting reports of whether his father is in a medically induced coma or if he's just sedated, different people saying different things. Either way, it doesn't sound good, and it's very eerie how he suffered a stroke on the same day that the news broke that Fox is reviving a new version. They're bringing back basically a new version of 90210, which is the show that made him famous all those years ago. And most of the old actors are coming back for it. I mean, I guess they're working it differently, where they're going to be playing themselves and not their old characters. It's very weird. But same day that news broke and Fox dropped the trailer for it, this happened. Although he isn't supposed to be part of that show. He's already part of a different TV show. But only 52 years old. So I hope he pulls through. This is episode 588. Of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 3rd, 2019. I am the Solid Monster. We now have a Facebook invitation up for our WrestleMania weekend event. For those of you who may have missed it, we're going to get the gang together the Friday before WrestleMania. I mentioned this last couple of weeks. I said I was thinking about doing it on the Friday before. That seemed to be okay with most of you. And so the event will be on Friday, April 5th, starting at 2 p.m., and running straight through pretty much until about 6, 6.30. At that point, anybody who is going to the NXT TakeOver show at the Barclays Center, like myself, can just walk right over to the arena. We're doing it at the King's Beer Hall. We've been there before. It's about four blocks away, maybe, from Barclays, so it's an easy walk over. That just seemed to be the time that worked best for most people. So you don't have to RSVP on the invite. There's no list you have to get on. There's no cover charge to get in the door. There never is. But if you could go to the Facebook invite and just RSVP anyway, just so I can get a sense of headcount and who's coming, that would be great. I have linked to it on my Twitter. You can find it on Facebook, of course. There will be drink specials announced in the weeks to come, so you can check the invite out sporadically to see the updates there. And I hope to see everybody in Brooklyn for WrestleMania weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. Of course, keep using our Audible code to get yourself a free book and a trial of the Audible service, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Literally tens and tens of thousands of books to choose from. Doesn't have to be a wrestling book, but there's some real good ones on there. Daniel Bryan's book, Justin Roberts' book, Bob Holly's book. Those are the ones I always keep coming back to. Chris Jericho, all of his books really are great. The second one was really good. That one is on Audible as well. You can get them for free. Pick one and get it for free. Just use our code, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Sign up for the 30-day trial of the service. That's the only way you can take advantage of this offer. And then whatever book you choose, even if you cancel the trial, you get to keep the book no matter what. So hop on that. And I want to say thank you to the very many people who made a contribution and a PayPal donation to the show this week. There were so many shout-outs this week that I had to break them up. So if you don't hear your name mentioned here up front, fear not. More shout-outs are going to come here in a few minutes, so just stick with me. But I want to say thank you. Of course, you guys know $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out here on the show. Thank you to the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, John Loose Cannon Lopez, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Pull No Punches Alan Ragasa, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, Stephen Handyman Halistick, Ryan the Dagger McTaggart, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, the Anarchist Andrew Heller, Poison Pill Lindsay Manns. We've got Amanda Bling Bling Blasco making a first-time donation, so thank you to her. Also, first-time donator, the Hoosier Hellraiser, Matt Nicholson, thank you for your support. Around the Diamond, Scott Edwards, who has a baseball podcast by that same name. I've been tuning into some of the spring training games for the Mets, getting ready for the new season. So if you are a baseball fan, check out his new show, Around the Diamond. You can listen to it right now in iTunes. I want to give a shout-out to Jerry and his older brother, Eduardo Crossbones Rodriguez, who passed away 2 years ago. He always said that if he ever became a wrestler, that would be his name. Until he's called up to the main roster, of course, and then Vince shortens his name to just Eduardo. But I remember when Jerry first told me about what had happened and just how awful it was, and I'm happy to show some love for Crossbones and the family here on the Sound Off, so shout out to Jerry. And a very happy birthday to my buddy, the Irish Wolf, Simon Peter Munoz from Genie. We both wish you all the best, and I cannot wait to see you on television soon beating EC3, since everybody else does that already anyway. And hey, Zelda is God 123, thank you for the kind words on iTunes as well, shout out to him. So there'll be more shout-outs to come. If you didn't hear your name, don't worry. We'll get back to that here in a few minutes. I do have to mention something very important here. For the 8th year in a row, Kevin Nash is hosting his shenanigans party over WrestleMania weekend. I've been to this party before. You may have heard me talk about it in the past. This year, it's going to be just a few blocks away from Madison Square Garden, following the Ring of Honor New Japan show at MSG on Saturday, April 6th. Starting at 11 p.m., it's going to be running all the way through until 3 a.m. into the wee hours. Nash himself is going to be coming directly from the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony that night where a few of his buddies are being inducted, and you never know who may show up at this party. They're expecting over 20 different stars to attend. Again, I've been to a few of these parties before. They're always a lot of fun. It is 21 and over. VIP will get you free open bar all night. Platinum VIP gets you a table. Gold VIP gets you free drinks as well and access to the VIP lounge to meet all of the official guests. And there'll be a bunch of unofficial ones there too who stop in. Sound Off listeners can get a discount right now if you use promo code SOLOMONSTER. You can get $10 off VIP tickets. Once those are sold out, and they will sell out, using that code will get you $5 off general admission tickets. You can get your tickets right now at facebook.com/PWR show. Just look under the events tab. Or you could just go directly using the bit.ly link, bit.ly/shenanigansNYC. So that's bit.ly/shenanigansNYC. Mikhail's Pub is the place where the event is being held. I went to Mikhail's, actually, for the Impact Hall of Fame ceremony last year for Abyss. It's a pretty cool spot. And if you go to the bit.ly site to buy tickets, when you click the green button to buy, you'll see the enter promotional code link at the top. That's where you enter the code SOLOMONSTER for the discount. So jump on that now. Don't wait. I am going to be giving away 2 gold VIP tickets to the party later on in the show this week. I'm not going to say when. You have to just keep listening. You never know when it may come, but there will be a trivia question. And if you are the first person to tweet me the correct answer, you will win 2 gold VIP tickets to the shenanigans party. So that's coming up a little bit later on here in the show. This is not official yet from WWE, but PW Insider reported this week that it looks like WrestleMania is coming back to the Sunshine State next year. I'm sure that will make all those people in Minneapolis and Vancouver and Indianapolis and all these places waiting for WrestleMania to either come to their city or come back to their city. This is not going to make them very happy that they're going back to Florida again, but it looks like WrestleMania 36 is coming to Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida, Sunday, April 5th, 2020. Apparently, some people refer to the stadium name as Ray J for short, which you will never, ever hear me do here on this show. When I think of Ray J, I think of Love and Hip Hop and that video with Kim Kardashian. But there is a press conference scheduled for this Saturday, March 7th. That is where they are likely to make the announcement official. This would be the fourth WrestleMania to be hosted in the state of Florida. Two in Orlando, one in Miami, and now this would be one in Tampa. Raymond James Stadium, again, home of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It will also be hosting Super Bowl 55 the year after WrestleMania 36. And it will also be the home to the XFL's new Tampa Bay team starting next year. I'm always happy to see WrestleMania in a warmer climate, so I have no real complaints about WrestleMania going back to Florida. I don't know how often it rains in Tampa in April, but it's Florida. Right? If anybody's been to Florida, if you live in Florida, you could be raining buckets one minute and then clear and sunny the next minute. There's just no rhyme or reason for it. So I would just say bring a poncho if you plan to attend. I'm waiting for that new Las Vegas stadium to be completed. That's the only thing I'm waiting for. I think that it is due to open, I believe, next summer, I think, is when the stadium officially opens, barring any delays, which would mean WrestleMania 37... is a possibility for Las Vegas. That's what I'm waiting for. I think there's a new stadium in LA, too, that's being built. But that poor guy with the Vancouver sign that we see at some of these WWE shows is going to have to be a little more patient. I think he's going to be waiting a little while longer before WrestleMania comes back up to Canada. Roman Reigns is back, and he gave everybody on Monday the best possible news, the news that a lot of us, I think, expected. Once that it was announced in advance he was coming back and they were building it up like such a big deal, there's no way they would have been building that up for anything but a positive announcement. And the positive announcement is that he is officially in remission from leukemia. 4 months after sharing his diagnosis with the world, he is back in remission. Now, this does not mean that he's cured. It does not mean that it can't come back. This was his second round with the disease. Hopefully there is not a third. But, you know, when it comes back like that, the chances of it coming back again are always there. They're always in the back of your mind. You're always sort of waiting for the other shoe to fall. It's not the best feeling in the world. So I think people need to kind of keep perspective on that. But he looked good. He got the biggest ovation of his career. I think it's safe to say his mother was there in the front row. The Rock's mother was there. The Rock's mother shows up to more WWE shows than The Rock. They may as well give her a roster spot at this point. Make her a GM for one of the shows. But it was just, it was a great way to open the show on Monday night. He'll be the biggest babyface now for a while, at least, on Monday Night Raw. I don't think it's going to last forever. Certainly not if they book him the way they did before. And they really start forcing him upon people again. I think it'll benefit him, frankly, not to be the focal point, the number one focal point of the show for a little while. But for now, the Boo Birds are drowned out, and I'm sure Vince McMahon could not be happier. He's got his top guy back healthy, right? He came back, he got a hero's welcome. And more importantly, he has another big name back on the active roster at a time when they have had to deal with a slew of injuries. And now they have a big name back in the fold that they can, you know, immediately, if they want to, insert back into major storylines. Now, reportedly, it was Roman's choice to return now. As far as the question of why now, why not wait, this was his choice. He contacted Vince McMahon. He was the first person in WWE that he contacted to let him know, I'm in remission, I'm ready to come back. And of course, once he told Vince that, Vince was like, well, all right, pal. And, you know, the plans were put in motion for Roman Reigns to make his big comeback. And to the few knuckle-draggers still out there who still insisted to me, that because he, you know, achieved remission in less than 4 months, well, this can't possibly be real. The whole thing must be a work. If you're calling Roman Reigns a liar, then you're calling me a liar too, because I've had a family member achieve remission in less, not only, forget 4 months, in the first 4 weeks of treatment. And that was from acute leukemia, not chronic. We don't know what kind of leukemia he has, nor is it any of our business if he chooses not to share that. But I can't tell you how many times I heard that online, whether it was directed at me or I just saw it on my timeline. Well, It can't be real, and here's why. And they're giving timelines like they've got their medical degree. Oh, he should share what type of disease. He doesn't have to prove anything to anybody. He doesn't. The onus is not on him to prove to people that he's sick. This is not a court case. The burden of proof does not fall on his shoulders. He's not defending himself against some charges. I was amazed by all of the Doogie fucking Housers on Twitter with their online medical degrees telling me what is and isn't possible. If I want to learn more about brain damage, I'll be sure to consult you. For leukemia, leave it to the doctors and the people who have actually dealt with this before. I watched that interview he gave on Good Morning America. He sat down with Robin Roberts and, you know, the next morning, and he's talking about his mom and how it affected her, his whole family, you know, how the news and everything just sort of affected all of them. And you still, you've got people who want to make a spectacle of themselves on social media. And it's not a matter of what is and isn't possible. That's not the debate here. Well, isn't it possible that it could be? We're not talking about what is and isn't possible. It's that these people believe it to be true. And that's what's scary about it. A lot of people really exposed themselves the last 2 weeks. And that's really the last time I'm even going to address this. I've said my piece, and I'm not wasting another breath on these people. Roman came back out later in the show. He got physical. He made the save with Seth Rollins for Dean Ambrose when Dean was being ganged up on by Lashley, Corbin, McIntyre, and Elias. We got a couple of Superman punches. He had a spear. No Shield pose. No Shield reunion. It was actually kind of bizarre the way they did this. Because they come out, right? They make the save for Dean Ambrose. Dean's over in the corner. He's laid out. They come out to make the save. And then they just left the ring and walked off. And left Ambrose all by himself laying in the ring. So clearly it was a tease for a Shield reunion. They didn't want to give it away on the first night. And we might get that reunion, we might get that Shield pose, that Shield fist bump as soon as tomorrow night on Raw. Local advertising for Fastlane is out. That's coming up on pay-per-view a week from today. And the advertising has a handicap match listed with Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins due to take on Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley, and Baron Corbin. Dean Ambrose, you have to think, is going to be added to that match. I mean, after what they did on Monday, he has to be. They could add Elias on the heel side, since he was part of that beatdown on Ambrose. If they do, they could have Braun Strowman then maybe team up with the Shield, and instead of it being a handicap match or a six-man tag, maybe it turns into an eight-man tag. You know, all these guys have been involved with one another, so it's hard for me to think, well, believe me, I'm over the whole Braun Strowman versus Baron Corbin and the whole heel trio deal. But there's no other role for Strowman on the show unless you sort of throw him in there and turn it into a big eight-man tag. So I think that that's also a distinct possibility for the show. And again, the more people in the match, the less ring time that is required of Roman Reigns. I don't know where he's at physically in terms of ring shape or how much they want him doing. So him being in a six-man tag or an eight-man tag in his first match back makes a lot of sense. Instead of throwing him in there in a singles match, it makes sense to kind of ease him back into things by putting him in some kind of a tag team situation. So that does make sense. As far as what role Roman might play at WrestleMania this year, that's still up in the air. Obviously, if he wrestles at Fastlane, there is zero chance that he isn't wrestling at WrestleMania. If he's back on the pay-per-view next weekend and he's in a match, he will be at WrestleMania in some form or fashion physically in the ring. I just don't see how there's a chance of it being any other way. And I know that Dean Ambrose is suddenly a babyface again, and you know, it looks like there might be a little Shield reunion again. But boy, would it get him some good heel heat if he, let's say, reunited with his buddies on Raw tomorrow night, they set up the match for Fastlane, and then at the pay-per-view, he turns on the Shield. Costs them the match. And then it was Roman Reigns one-on-one with Dean Ambrose at WrestleMania. That'd be a hell of a better spot for Dean than it would have been against Nia Jax. Thankfully, we haven't heard anything more about that in about a month. I think that idea went the way of the dodo a while back. But this could be like that little fake out, the way I look at it, that little fake out that we got with Stone Cold back in 2001 when, you know, the old Stone Cold came back and we all thought he was back on Team WWF. He was going to lead the charge with Team WWF into battle against the Alliance. But then what happened at the Invasion pay-per-view? 6 days later, he turned on them. He turned on WWE and he helped the Alliance win. And then he led the whole Alliance faction, and there's a lot of different reasons why that thing failed. That's one of many. I don't think when people thought about that invasion, they thought, huh, you know what I really think that they should do? I think that they should take a WWF guy and have him lead the invading charge. But that's what they did. And hey, we got a lot of entertaining television, I will say, with heel Stone Cold and Kurt Angle and banjos and cowboy hats and badges and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I see this as maybe being a similar type of situation where Ambrose, it looks like he's a babyface again, but maybe he really isn't. You know, maybe at Fastlane, he's even more enraged now because now Roman is back and the focus is all on Roman. And so he can cost them the match and that could be the WrestleMania match there. It's just, I don't know if that's the plan or not. I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking as far as Ambrose. I don't know what his status is, if he's still leaving, if he's considering staying. I don't know. I think that's all up in the air right now. But I would rather they do something like that than just inserting Roman into the Rollins and Lesnar match, which I think is also a possibility. Roman Reigns never lost the Universal Championship. He had to give it up. He was never beaten for it. I mean, it took, 2 years probably for Finn Balor to even get a crack at it, and he also vacated the title. I don't think we're going to have to wait 2 years to see Roman Reigns competing for the championship again. But don't think that there isn't at least the possibility that that could happen. And they could turn that into a triple threat match. And I see Seth Rollins has been dealing with a back injury. He should be good to go for WrestleMania. He should be good to go for Fastlane. But if there's any doubts about his physical state, and I'm just saying, there's always the possibility that Roman could be inserted into the championship match at WrestleMania. And I don't like that idea. I think that's way too soon. I think you've got a lot of goodwill built up with this guy. And, you know, to just shove him right back in there, you're going to kill a lot of that goodwill, I think, that you have been gifted by these horrible circumstances. But they say turn a negative into a positive. They have been gifted this reaction. You know, this situation here where Roman is now coming out to loud cheers wherever he goes. I don't know why you would do anything to jeopardize that. Yeah, like there was one person who emailed me this week, Mange, in England. He's a listener of the podcast, and he sent a mailbag question into me this week saying, WrestleMania 31, Seth Rollins denied Roman Reigns from winning the WWE title against Brock Lesnar by cashing in Money in the Bank. WrestleMania 35. Roman, would he cost Seth Rollins the championship against Brock Lesnar like Seth did to him? If this was any other time, I would say do it. Pull the trigger. Turn him heel. Absolutely. But now? Absolutely not. You can't do that now. They finally got what they always wanted. Now, I don't know how long it's going to last for. You know, I don't know how long this honeymoon period with him is going to last. But Roman is the biggest babyface in the company now. Maybe outside of Kofi. But, you know, he's a bigger star than Kofi is. He's their top babyface. This is Vince McMahon's wet dream. Now they're supposed to turn him heel? There's no way. But it would make sense. It would absolutely make sense. Or I should say they can make sense of it very easily. If they wanted to have Roman do to Seth what Seth did to him. And Roman is just obsessed with getting the championship back. He wants to be the one, like he did at SummerSlam, to slay the beast. And I've done it before. You've never done it. It's got to be me. I never lost my title. You know, the only thing that kept me motivated the entire time was, you know, winning back the championship. Of course, they already fucked that storyline up. He came out and said that this is not about championships. I guess you can't do that. But yeah, I mean, you could certainly come up with a storyline that, you know, an explanation for why Roman would do something like that. And boy, that would make for a hell of a memorable moment at WrestleMania. But to throw all of that goodwill away that's been built up with this guy, why would they do that? There's no reason for them to do that right now. The other big story coming out of Raw Monday night was Batista. Batista crashed the party at the end of Raw. Literally, it was Ric Flair's 70th birthday party, and they invited Sting without the face paint. Ricky Steamboat, Shawn Michaels, Kurt Angle was there. As far as we know, Batista wasn't invited. And so he decided to crash the party himself. Triple H went to go introduce Flair to bring him on out. They had all the wrestlers out on stage, parting the Red Sea, waiting for Ric Flair to come on down, but he never came out. Instead, they cut to the back. We saw Big Dave dragging one of the cameramen to Flair's dressing room, which I thought was a nice little touch there. Because, I mean, I guess you could have had the cameraman stationed there anyway, waiting for Rick to come out of the dressing room and just kind of follow him to the ring. I guess that would have made sense. But, yeah, just to show that Batista's not supposed to be there. Come here, I want you to film this. He drags this poor guy over. We don't actually see what happens. We hear a little commotion inside the dressing room, and then the door swings open, and he's dragging Flair's body out into the hallway, and he looks into the camera and just says, "Hey, Hunter, do I have your attention now?" Kind of reminds me of CM Punk. CM Punk said something very similar back during the Summer of Punk in 2011. "Do I have everybody's attention now?" So despite the entire roster standing out there on stage, nobody thought to run to the back to rescue this 70-year-old man who was just pummeled on his birthday, no less. That was Triple H's job, of course, in storyline. We can't move. Our feet are frozen. We have to let Triple H run to the back. And, of course, by the time he got back there, because Triple H is no marathon runner, Dave was gone. I thought this was a great cliffhanger ending to this show. And a great way to kick off this Triple H Batista program for WrestleMania. 7 million views on YouTube for Batista's return. That's more than Roman Reigns got for his remission announcement. 7 million views. That's a lot. That's a lot. I love this angle. Once they blew off the arrest angle earlier in the night with Becky Lynch, I tweeted out, I said, well, I guess this paves the way for them, if they want to shoot a big angle at the end of the show with Batista and Triple H to tease their WrestleMania match. That's exactly what they did. You had to know that they were only doing this party to shoot a big angle of some kind. I think it was Lance Storm who tweeted before the show. He goes, man, you know, am I the only one hoping that this Ric Flair party really isn't just an angle and it's just really a party to honor the guy and he comes out and speaks? And I just thought to myself, yeah, yeah, I think you might be. Because we've seen that. Look, Ric Flair got the greatest send-off of any wrestler ever when he, quote-unquote, retired in 2008. We saw this already. He was in the ring and Steamboat came out, and I think Greg Valentine came out. All these different people came out. It was this great send-off. I remember it went to almost 11:30 that night. One of the best, maybe the best ending ever to an episode of Monday Night Raw was that night in 2008 after WrestleMania 24 when Ric Flair got his retirement send-off. And, you know, we're in WrestleMania season here. So, yeah, I'd like for them to move forward with these WrestleMania storylines, because this card is kind of lacking right now. This card needed something like this. They don't have anything better planned. They had to get something going. And Ric Flair has been honored enough in the past. So you knew going into this, you hoped and you expected that this was going to be the setup to some kind of angle or match for WrestleMania. You all saw the Evolution reunion on SmackDown 1000. What did I say after that show? That was the first seed planted for the eventual WrestleMania match. We know that Batista was already in talks with them about a return. This was no secret. He said for years now that he wanted to come back. He wanted to have one more WrestleMania match with Triple H. That was his preferred opponent. And not only did he want to wrestle Triple H, he wanted to put him over. I guess because back in 05, when Batista was first on the ascent, Triple H put him over. In fact, he put him over in 3 straight pay-per-view matches. So I guess in his mind, you know, Big Dave, he wants to pay it forward. Or actually, would it be considered paying it forward if you're putting over the old guy who already put you over? Wouldn't paying it forward mean you're putting over a new guy? Well, he doesn't want to do that. He wants to put over Triple H. He already put over the new guy. Dave Batista tapped out to Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30. He already did more than I think he was even expected to do. This is what he wants. He wants to put over Triple H. Because we all know if anybody needs to be put over here, it's Triple H. But during that Evolution reunion, if you remember Batista, he pointed out, he said, look, you know, Hunter, you never beat me one-on-one. All the matches that you and I had, you never beat me. And Triple H sort of dismissed it. Now Batista says, do I have your attention now? I assume that's what he'll be, you know, when he comes out on Raw tomorrow night, that was what he was referring to with that line. I love heel Batista. I think he is absolutely great in that role. Even back when he was wearing the leather vest, it was that way too brief period when he was the WWE champion in 2010 and he came out in the leather vest and he was talking about how John Cena's out there kissing babies and hugging fat girls while he's, you know, at the gym working out. He was great. And so Triple H then has to be the babyface if we're going to be going with heel Batista. And what better way to get heel heat than to have him beat up Ric Flair? You know, my idea to have Becky Lynch be the one to beat up Flair and maybe put him in the arm bar and threaten to break his arm unless they reinstate her and give her back her WrestleMania match, that was all predicated on Charlotte being part of the segment, which she wasn't. She was nowhere to be found. That whole idea was all predicated on the idea that Charlotte would have been out there, and maybe her and Rick would have been yucking it up at Becky's expense and trying to get booed and get heel heat, and then Becky would come out and you know, threaten to break the old man's arm. And she would get cheered when they reinstated her. That way, if Becky beat him up, people would be less likely to turn on her. So that would have been the idea. But here, Flair didn't do anything wrong. He didn't even get to come out. He was just coming out to celebrate his birthday, and this guy got manhandled. I will say this. Do I really want to see babyface Triple H wrestling at WrestleMania? No, I do not. No, I do not. I didn't need to see it last time at WrestleMania 29 when he beat Brock Lesnar, and I really don't feel like I need to see it now either. But I like Batista as the arrogant heel enough to tolerate it. So if that's what it takes, then so be it. And I think the build-up to this is going to be a lot of fun. The build-up is probably going to be a lot better than the match. The match, that I don't know. I don't know how that's going to go. But there is one way that I think they can make this match really interesting and really mean something. I was thinking along the same lines as Cody, one of our listeners, not the other Cody, when he sent me this message on Facebook. I want to make sure I at least give him credit on this too, because he was thinking along the same lines. What if we come to find out, in light of Vince McMahon coming out all these weeks and making these unilateral decisions about who gets suspended and who's going to go to WrestleMania, he's overruling Triple H and Stephanie left and right, it feels like. What if we find out that he's the one who told Batista to go ahead and attack Ric Flair? Or even if he didn't tell him to do it, he comes out in support of Batista, in support of what he did to Triple H's friend, much to the chagrin of Triple H and Stephanie. Now Triple H and Vince have a big blow-up over Vince's behavior of late. He says, Vince, you know, he's either lost his mind or, you know, you're drunk with power. And the match at WrestleMania between Triple H and Batista is for control of WWE. Vince doesn't approve of some of the decisions that his daughter and his son-in-law have made of late. He's felt the need to correct them on his own. He questions their judgment. He questions their fitness to take the reins one day of WWE. And he wants to take away their power. Triple H, he's willing to agree to all that if Vince agrees to put up his position in the company. And so the match at WrestleMania is for control of WWE, with Batista basically serving as Vince's surrogate in that match. At least that would make sense out of what's been going on lately. I have to assume that it's headed somewhere, that whole storyline with Vince making these decisions. I have to think that's going somewhere. But to build to some kind of a payoff at WrestleMania would make sense to me, and it would be a great way to write Vince off television. You know, with again, he's the bad guy in this equation. He suspended Becky Lynch, who everybody loves, and took her out of the WrestleMania main event. He screwed over Kofi Kingston, who everybody loves, and took him out of the championship match for now at WrestleMania. Triple H would clearly be the fan favorite in that match, right? Because people would want him to gain power. They'd want Vince to go away. They'd want to sing the na-na-na song and send him on his way. So I do kind of look at this, though. The idea that the fans would want Triple H to win and would want Triple H to get more power. And I laugh and I say, be careful what you wish for, right? Because this is, after all, the same Triple H who was on SmackDown, what, 3 weeks ago? Telling Becky Lynch to ignore the fans, ignore what we think, because what we think doesn't matter. But I guess in this case, we would be forced to choose between the lesser of two evils. We've got some more PayPal shoutouts here. I want to thank everybody who contributed this past week. No Mercy, Nick Horacek, thank you. The Texas Hangman, Michael Hanna. Tyler the Tank Smutskowitz. The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep. Recon Russell Bulware. Gerard the Bod. The French Destroyer, Jeremy Belhodge, thank you. Also, Define Real. He has dubbed a new video with last year's 2018 Anime Fight of the Year between Goku and Jiren, subbed with Pete Dunne's entrance theme. And a warning, he gives a warning here for people currently watching Dragon Ball Super English dub. It contains spoilers, so he wants everybody to know that. But you can find the video posted right now in our group on Facebook. Your ringside pitchman, Donnie Harris Jr. Shout out to Continental Championship Wrestling. Check him out at ccwrestling.biz. And you can catch all new episodes of CCW Superstars of the Ring every Wednesday on YouTube. Also, shout out to Rad Rob Francois. Check out his Rad Turtles Wrestling podcast, which he hosts along with his buddy Jeff Johnson. Their show is now part of the Reality Check Podcast Network. It drops every Tuesday with interviews, and on Thursday with a discussion about Raw, SmackDown, top news. They have listener questions and a whole lot more. You can subscribe on iTunes to the show or at radturtleswrestlingpodcast.simplecast.fm. And also follow them on Twitter at radturtlespod. That's radturtles, P-O-D. So thank you again to all of you who contributed in some form or fashion to the show this week. You guys are awesome. The Honky Tonk Man was announced as the latest inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2019. He joins DX so far as the only two official acts announced for the Hall of Fame. Jimmy Hart would make sense, I would think, to be his inductor, but he's going in separately for a second time as part of a planned Hart Foundation induction this year. I guess that's a little spoiler, but anyway, they can't, so I guess they could have him do it, but that would be kind of weird, and they can't have Peggy Sue do it, because she's dead, unfortunately. Sherry is no longer with us, and they can't have Rockabilly do it, because he's going into the Hall of Fame this year also, as part of the DX induction. Honky and Rockabilly, part of the same Hall of Fame class. What a world. What a world we live in. I guess Greg Valentine would be the only... I hear Greg Valentine is not all that busy these days. I don't know how much of a public speaker he is. I don't know how good of an induction speech he would give. I actually see rumors that WWE might possibly be doing away with inductors. I don't know. I think that comes from Sean Waltman on his podcast. And obviously Sean Waltman is pretty well connected to certain people inside WWE. That doesn't mean that it's true. It doesn't mean that that's the final decision that's going to be made. I guess I would be okay with that. Sometimes these inductors do wax a little too eloquently. They do go on for a little long. I mean, look, they put these great video packages together, right, for these guys. So realistically, you don't need somebody to induct you into the Hall of Fame. You could throw it to a video package and then throw it right back to Jerry Lawler, who's the host of this thing usually. And he could be the one to just introduce the person and have them come out on stage. That would save a lot of time. I can't say I'm against the idea. Jerry Lawler, speaking of which, it's going to be very interesting to watch him introduce Honky on there, given all the things that Honky has said about him over the years. My understanding, though, is that they buried the hatchet a number of years ago. I mean, probably in each other's back, but... things may be cool now between the two of them. I don't know. They are actually first cousins. Their mothers were sisters. So that is the family relation. You heard the audio I played at the top of the podcast from that shoot interview that Honky did years ago with Sean Oliver. He called the Hall of Fame bullshit and a joke. It was only bullshit and a joke when he felt that it wasn't worth his while. And it would have hurt his ability to take bookings because of some of the restrictions that WWE puts on these people when they sign the deal. WWE has offered him at least one other time. They have offered him a spot in the Hall of Fame. The first time, I think, was about a decade ago. They might have offered it to him again at around 2013, and he turned him down. He said no. And now that I guess he's not wrestling as much, if at all these days, and he's starting to settle down a little bit, I guess now he feels, now it's time. Now it's time to get my name out there again and maybe put the jumpsuit on and be the honky-tonk man. I want to go through this guy's career here because there's just a lot of really interesting stories when you really look at what he did, especially once he came to WWE and some of the backstage stories and the urban legends over the years. It actually really is kind of interesting. He was doing the Elvis gimmick up in Stampede before he ever came to WWE. So it wasn't a Vince McMahon creation. Vince liked it, and he brought him in, just like with Hogan and a lot of those guys, you know, Hulkamania and Hogan. That existed before he ever came to work for Vince McMahon. Vince liked it. He saw that he could take that and make it an even bigger thing, and so he brought those guys in. You know, those were not original creations of like, The Undertaker was an original creation of Vince McMahon. But, you know, Honky was doing the Elvis thing long before he ever came in, but he brought, you know, and by the way, on that, as far as Honky doing things before he came to WWE, you want to see something really weird? Go dig up those videos of him, those old videos as one half of the Blonde Bombers back in Memphis in the 70s. He looks like a completely different person. It's really weird to see him with the blonde hair just being anything other than the honky-tonk man. But the original plan when he came into WWE was not for him to be a heel. He was supposed to be a friend of Hulk Hogan's. That was supposed to make him a made man, right? His very first appearance, the Junkyard Dog introduced him to the crowd. This was after the tag team match with JYD and George the Animal Steele. I think they had just won. And JYD gets on the mic and he introduces this guy, the Honky Tonk Man. And when you watch the video, he comes out in the jumpsuit and the reaction was not exactly what Vince McMahon had probably hoped for. Even on his very first night, reaction was lukewarm at best. But Vince was determined to get this guy over. Honky on the interview, you know, later on, Hulk Hogan would do inset interviews during Honky Tonk Man's matches, praising him and talking this guy up. It didn't matter how many times Hogan endorsed him, nothing worked. And so Vince decided, we're going to have a vote of confidence for the Honky Tonk Man. And they asked the fans to send in cards and letters to a P.O. Box address in support of the Honky Tonk Man. And when they read the results later on, more people disliked Honky than liked him. Obviously, by then, they had already made the decision that this isn't working. We have to go in a different direction. Because they could have just worked the results of the poll. But they were honest. I'm sure the results reflected what they said on television, which is that most people probably just didn't like this guy. Art imitates life, I guess. And that was the catalyst for Honky to go turn on the fans and become the hated heel that everybody remembers him being. If this was the Vince McMahon of today, he'd have given the Honky Tonk Man five straight WrestleMania main events as a babyface, and we'd have Michael Cole on television every week telling us, well, the fans just like to have fun. They boo the people they like, and they cheer the people they hate. But that's the story that's always been told. That Vince really did think this guy was going to get over as a babyface, and when he saw the crowd reactions to him, they decided to just go with it and turn him heel. I do sometimes wonder if that was the plan all along, was just for him to be the heel, and the whole thing was just set up that way on purpose. I mean, if so, I thought what they did then was a brilliant way of turning him. But I've heard Bruce Pritchard say that Vince really did see Honky as a babyface. There was no great plan here. He really thought this guy was going to be cheered. And Vince did the same thing with Hillbilly Jim. He associated Hillbilly Jim with Hulk Hogan when he first debuted. Hogan was going, I'm going to train this guy to become a wrestler. And it worked. And Hillbilly was a babyface for the rest of his career. And now he's a Hall of Famer, too. But with Honky Tonk Man, the fans just never bought into it. But he is best known, of course, and we're going to hear this a thousand times, the night of the Hall of Fame, for calling himself the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, because he still, to this day, holds the record for the longest IC title run, 454 days. What is that, 16 weeks or something? Not 64. I think it's 64 total weeks as Intercontinental Champion from June of 87 through August of 88. And there is an interesting story behind that. Ricky Steamboat, he had just beaten Randy Savage to win the title of WrestleMania 3. Classic match, everybody knows it. It gets talked about ad nauseum. Steamboat was going to be one of Vince's top babyfaces. He was going to be the champion for a very long time. A few weeks later, Steamboat goes to Vince McMahon and he asks him for a few weeks off to be at home with his wife. She was due to give birth to their, I think their first son, might be their only son, but she was having a baby soon and he wanted some time off to be with her. And that did not sit well with Vince McMahon because here he had just gifted him the Intercontinental Championship, right? He had just booked him to win this big match at WrestleMania. The IC title, believe it or not, used to be a pretty big deal. It certainly doesn't feel that way now, but it used to be. I mean, it really was the second biggest title in the entire company. You know, people called it the workhorse title because you could put that on in main events on some shows. They could headline shows with the Intercontinental Championship match, you know, in the main event. And they were, I mean, the schedule they had those guys on back then was inhuman. It's no wonder they were all pilled up and drinking and doing things, because imagine working in those rings. I was just talking about that last week, how those rings felt like concrete. Imagine working in those rings on the road as many times as they were back then, going as hard as they were. Very little oversight. It's not like it is today. But, you know, Steamboat was put in that role, he had a certain responsibility, and Vince was not happy about this. Now you want to take time off? I can't have you taking time off. I just put the belt on you. So he made the decision to take the title off of Steamboat. The belief has always been that Butch Reed was going to win the championship, and he was going to be the man to beat Steamboat. As the legend has it, he no-showed the Superstars taping where he was going to win it, or he showed up late. They needed a replacement. Vince and Hogan are having a conversation in the hallway when Hogan looks and he spots Honky Tonk Man walking by. And he points at him and he says, "What about him, brother?" And the rest is history. If you watch the post-match celebration in the heel locker room after Honky won the belt, Butch Reed is there. He's right there in the background. So either he showed up late or the story is complete bullshit. But Reed himself did a shoot interview last year and he admitted that he did no-show a whole bunch of tapings. He just was, you know, generally burned out. I was just telling you about the schedule, right? It's not hard to imagine why. He was burned out and yeah, he admits that he would no-show some tapings from time to time. He says that's what cost him the chance to be the Intercontinental Champion. So there you go. That really is the best version of events, I guess. He confirmed it himself. Honky Tonk Man lucked into the biggest break of his career. Not only did he need Butch Reed to not be there when he was supposed to be, he had to be walking down the hallway at the exact right moment. The stars had to align perfectly for this guy to get the biggest break of his career. Now, that being said, yeah, he was lucky, but he was a heat magnet. People hated this guy's guts. You can mock the gimmick all you want to. And a lot of people do, but a lot of the live events that he headlined back then, again, they'd have their A crew, they'd have their B crew, and sometimes they even had a C crew, and they would run three different cities on one night. The shows that he headlined a lot of times would sell out because people desperately wanted to see him lose. They wanted to see this guy get his ass kicked, and they would pay money to see it. You know, my very first live wrestling show was the post-Christmas show at Madison Square Garden back in 1987. The only thing I remember from that night is the main event. And the main event was Macho Man Randy Savage against the Honky Tonk Man for the Intercontinental Championship with Jimmy Hart suspended above the ring in a shark cage. That was the main event on the show that night. And there were a lot of nights like that. Now, his run was almost cut short early in 88 we wouldn't be having this whole Hall of Fame discussion about this guy being the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time had Vince McMahon gotten his way early in 88. And that's another story that has grown in legend over the years, and there's some slightly different versions of events, and it's all a matter of who you choose to believe. I would love one day for Vince McMahon to write a book, you know, or do a shoot interview on his own network, because you know it would do gangbuster numbers. I mean, why outsource it to RF Video or Conrad fucking Thompson? Just do it yourself. You have your own network. I know Vince was already on the Stone Cold podcast. I'm not talking about the Stone Cold podcast. I'm talking about like an all-out 3-hour-long fan Q&A submitted shoot interview with Vince McMahon. I would love that if I trusted that he would actually tell the truth. And I have absolutely no faith whatsoever that A, he would be able to tell the truth, or B, he would remember most of this shit in the first place. And that sucks, because he would be the one to answer all of these questions. But as the story goes, Vince McMahon wanted the Honky Tonk Man to drop the title to Randy Savage on their live main event special. This was in February of 88, this big special on NBC, right? This was the same show where Hulk Hogan dropped the title to Andre the Giant. Hogan had been the champion for 4 years, and it was a terrible match, as most of their matches were from, you know, 87 on. I mean, Hogan and Andre had some decent matches, or, you know, like 1980, even late 70s, they may have had a few matches. Their matches from 87 on, as far as actual matches go, were freaking dog shit. Andre couldn't do much. He just physically was not able to do much at that point. And so that was the night that Andre won the championship, the big evil Twin Hebner referee angle and all that. And that set up the tournament for WrestleMania 4 when the title was held up, when Andre gave it up to give the belt to Ted DiBiase, and they said, no, you can't do that. So they put this tournament together for WrestleMania because Hogan was going to go off to go film No Holds Barred. And the belief is that Ted DiBiase was going to win that tournament and he was going to get a heel run as the WWF champion. And that certainly is the story that DiBiase still tells to this day in all the interviews that he's ever done. And Honky Tonk Man even said that for a while he had heat with DiBiase because of it. Reason being, you know, why would DiBiase hate the Honky Tonk Man? Well, first of all, why wouldn't somebody hate the Honky Tonk Man? But in his case, Honky refused to drop the IC belt to Randy Savage. Because he knew, he was smart, he knew that if he dropped that championship, that was it. He was done for. The biggest run of his career would be over. That was his ceiling. He could not go any higher than that. And he was also sensitive to losing on live television like that. I guess maybe he thought it would hurt his value if he lost on TV, if he wanted to go work for Crockett. In fact, one version of the story has it that his contract was coming up and he flat out threatened to jump to Crockett if they made him lose that title. Honky's story is that he was working without a contract. This is his story. He was working on a handshake deal with Vince McMahon, which I find impossible to believe, especially considering he was the second biggest champion in the company. You're going to tell me that you're working on a handshake deal even back then? Back then, there were no contracts. I've heard him say that, too. He's full of shit. He knew he was dead in the water the minute he dropped that title, so he refused to lose. Here they are now. They're getting ready to go on live. So they had Randy Savage win the match by countout instead. Savage was furious. And instead, they decided to make Savage the WWF champion by having him win the tournament at WrestleMania. That's one hell of a consolation prize for the Macho Man, and a kick in the balls if you're the Million Dollar Man. Although the next year, to make up for it, they made a belt just for him, right? The Million Dollar, if you're not going to win the world title, we'll just make you your own title. And so they made the Million Dollar belt for him, and you know, he parlayed that into lots of success. Even years later, the Million Dollar belt was still on WWF television. But the story has been pretty consistent now for years of Honky refusing, DiBiase being screwed out of the world title. It's just, the more I think about it, it's hard for me to think the way that Mega Power story was set up, that the plan all along wasn't for Savage to win the title. It was the perfect long-term story if you think about it. They become friends, right? Late 87. Savage wins the title, early 88. And then when Hogan comes back, Savage grows jealous, disillusioned. Your eyes, they lust for Elizabeth, right? The whole deal. And it leads to a match. It leads to a split and then a match at WrestleMania 5. That plus the idea that they were going to have the heel win the championship at the end of WrestleMania just wasn't something they did back then. I mean, they only had 3 WrestleManias under their belt at the time, but just something they didn't do. But DiBiase is adamant that that's what happened. That's how it all played out. As far as who he would have feuded with, had Savage won the IC title, if DiBiase won the WWF title, Hogan's gone, right, for a few months. Who does he feud with? Hogan's gone. Savage has the IC. In his book, Hacksaw Jim Duggan claimed that had it not been for that traffic bust in 86 with the Iron Sheik, he thinks that he would have become WWF champion, Intercontinental champion, or tag team champion. I cannot see Jim Duggan holding the world title, but the idea that maybe he could have been the one to feud with DiBiase for the world title through part of 88, it really isn't that far-fetched when you really think about it. The company had Duggan working with Andre for a while. They wouldn't do that with just anybody. Duggan and DiBiase, they had a history together going back to their days in Mid-South. They had some wars down there in Mid-South. If Duggan wasn't booked like a complete buffoon, like a cartoon character, I don't think it's far-fetched to think that he could have been a placeholder contender until the summer before DiBiase would have just dropped the belt back to Hulk Hogan. But anyway, Hockey Talk Man. Instead, he dropped the championship to the Ultimate Warrior in 30 seconds at SummerSlam. He did an interview with Wrestling Inc. last year, where Honky said that he had total creative control over that match and that the entire thing was his idea. He put the whole thing together. That's what he said anyway. He was prescient about one thing. When he lost that Intercontinental title, he was worried that he would slide right back down the card, and that's exactly what happened. They paired him up with Greg Valentine for a run. They had that run as Rhythm and Blues. But not long after that, he was gone from the company, back on the independent scene. When Hulk Hogan joined WCW in 94, Jimmy Hart, got Honky a job with WCW. He lasted all of 3 months. He had 2 matches with Johnny B. Badd for the television title, both of which sucked. And then he left before their big blow-off was going to be at Starrcade. They were going to have their 3rd match, probably their final match. I'm sure, obviously, Bad was going to win, and Honky did not want to do the job. Eric Bischoff hated him so much. He hated him, he hated dealing with him so much, that in his book, he said that his favorite firing of anyone that he has ever fired in his career was the Honky Tonk Man. And then years later, when Bischoff was in TNA, and Honky was out there claiming, hey, you know, I'm in negotiations, I'm very close to signing a deal with TNA, Bischoff said that he would rather drive a rusty ice pick through his eye than ever have to work another day with that man. I take it Honky will not be listing Eric Bischoff as a reference on his resume. Honky did admit later, by the way, that he was full of shit. Not the first time he's been full of shit. There were never any negotiations with TNA. His return in 97, you know, he came back as a commentator. I don't know why. But they brought him back for a while as a commentator, and they were going to bring him back as a manager, too. They had this whole, I'm searching for my protege. And the big payoff was Billy Gunn was his protege and rebranded as Rockabilly. And that went about as well as you would have expected it to. He did come back and had a memorable cameo, a fun cameo, in the Royal Rumble match in 2001. I will say that was fun. He came out, he didn't overstay his welcome, he was playing a song, Kane took the guitar, smashed it over his head, threw him out of the ring. Great. Great cameo. Look, Honky Tonk Man can be very outspoken. He gives a very entertaining shoot interview. I've seen plenty of clips from Honky Tonk Man shoot interviews, and he can be a very charming, very entertaining guy in that kind of setting. But boy, the things that this guy has said, he comes across like a major league asshole. Just a major league asshole, this guy. And apparently, buying the rights to and trademarking other people's names and gimmicks, or again, trying to anyway, which is quite the shrewd business move, I will say, for him to swoop in and do that sort of thing and try to make money off other people's gimmicks while they're still out there with those gimmicks. I know he had heat with Jake Roberts and Roddy Piper for a while over that, tried to get their names. And when Jake called him out on it, on his bullshit, trying to, you know, again, get the rights to his name and all that, Honky's response was to say that, well, I decided not to trademark Jake's name because I didn't think he would live much longer. So it wouldn't have been worth the investment. What a stand-up guy. Maybe the only time that Dynamite Kid ever came across as likable to me in any of these backstage stories that you've heard about him over the years. And I think he talked about it in his book, Bret Hart talked about it in his book, is when he supposedly smacked the shit out of the Honky Tonk Man for disrespecting Harley Race. And shout out to Harley Race, we found out this week that he has lung cancer. He claims it's not chronic, it was Ric Flair, he was doing some Q&A event, I think, with Hulk Hogan, and he just casually let it slip. Oh, by the way, Harley Race, he's got terminal lung cancer. It's like, did he even want that out there publicly? Like, what are you doing, dude? And then Harley had to put a statement out, or his family did, saying it is true. He is dealing with lung cancer, but it's not terminal. And again, now I don't know if they're just saying that to cover up for it, or if, you know, Ric Flair got his lines crossed and he was wrong. But I mean, I heard that and I just thought, boy, I've not heard anything about Harley Race having terminal lung cancer, and I'm sure that if that's something he and his family wanted out there, they would have announced it on their own. And there's Ric Flair just casually throwing it out there. Like, huh. But anyway, shout out to Harley Race. Hopefully he's doing well. But this story was that Harley had surgery to have part of his intestine removed, and Honky made a joke about him not having any guts anymore. He was basically, you know, making fun of him. And so Dynamite stood up, and he backhanded Honky right out of his chair. Of course, Honky denies it. He said, well, Dynamite, he just yelled at me. He didn't physically assault me. He just yelled at me. I would have paid money to see the Dynamite Kid smack the shit out of the Honky Tonk Man. But he has his place in history. He drew well during his run as champion. I have no issue with him being acknowledged in the Hall of Fame. I don't doubt that he'll give an entertaining Hall of Fame speech. He'll probably be kissing a lot of ass that he was ripping for many years, but that's what happens in these situations. You kiss and make up. And look, maybe he'll even get a WrestleMania segment, or, well, I mean, they always have the Hall of Famers out there, but maybe on Raw the next night after WrestleMania, you know, he'll have a segment with Elias and they'll do something with the two of them. I would actually be surprised, frankly, if it doesn't happen. Raw Monday Night in Atlanta was actually a more enjoyable show this week than it has been. We had over 4,000 votes in our poll on Twitter. 83% thumbs up, 17% thumbs down. That is an astronomically positive score for Raw. I had to do a double take when I saw that. It opened with the great news from Roman Reigns. It ended with that hot angle with Batista and Ric Flair's party and the great cliffhanger, him beating up Flair. And in the middle, they did have one really good match with Finn Balor and Lio Rush, and the angle they did with Ronda Rousey seemingly surrendering her Raw Women's Championship, throwing it down at the feet of Stephanie McMahon, because Stephanie refused to reinstate Becky Lynch. Ronda said, I've had enough. This was after Becky attacked again out of the crowd. I didn't think Rousey's promo was very good, but the angle itself I liked. I don't mind them doing so many short matches. There really were no long matches this week. And there were a lot of like little short ones. Look, I don't mind it. 20 years ago, there were a lot of short matches, but that was when Raw was doing fives and sixes in the ratings every week because they actually knew most weeks how to put together an entertaining show where they had that one key storyline that would play out over the course of 2 hours that actually kept you engaged and kept you on the edge of your seat, whether it was Austin McMahon or Rock and Austin or whatever it may have been. If the show is fun, the show is fun. I don't care if we have a bunch of 5-minute matches or if we have a couple of 25-minute matches. You know, I just want an entertaining show. Not every match needs to be a 20-minute wrestling clinic. Although I think one each week would be nice, given that they have 3 hours to fill. There's really no reason not to. But I didn't even mind that so much. They just need to make the rest of the show more interesting. I really don't care about anything else happening on the show right now outside of Batista being back, and the Ronda and Becky stuff. That's not enough on a 3-hour show. There's got to be other things that are at least semi-interesting. Now, this whole Becky and Ronda Twitter war that's been going on has been a big story. It's turned into a big deal, and there's been a lot of debate about whether or not Ronda Rousey may have worked herself into a shoot with everything that's been going on, the back and forth barbs on Twitter. Let me run through some of them. I mean, there may have been more of them since I even, you know, copied these down here, but who knows? These were the key ones when things kind of got out of hand the other day. We had Becky Lynch tweeting at Ronda, telling her, "You go back and get that belt, because I didn't come this far to collect it from Stephanie. I came to take it from you." All right. It's a nice way to progress the storyline here. I don't want to win the title that way. I want to beat you for it. Makes sense. Ronda responds, says, "That's what I'm trying to do, dumbass. You hobbling around trying to be a ginger crutch ninja and taking fake prison photos in the hallway isn't helping." Becky responds and says, "Keep that F word out of your mouth and concentrate on getting better at this business instead of trying to remain above it. Looking forward to seeing you real soon." Again, pretty pedestrian stuff there. Ronda responds, "F word? You mean fake? Fake like your nonsensical BS armbar that doesn't even work and just looks like you're holding the dick that you wish you had?" Becky responds and says, "Huh. It does look exactly like one now that you mention it." And in the photo, she took the photo that Ronda used of that one episode of Raw when Becky had put her in the armbar, the disarmer, backstage. And in this updated photo, Becky transposed over the arm a photo, the headshot of Ronda's husband, Travis Brown, basically implying that Travis Brown is a giant dick. Well, that set off Ronda Rousey. She responded and said, "Rebecca Quinn, you know things are getting real here when they start using the real names." She says, "Rebecca Quinn, I don't care what the script says. I'm beating the living shit out of you the next time I see you." Later on, Becky responds, "Hey, Ron, you still mad, bro? Just checking because you went full Russo earlier. Wanted to make sure that you made it back okay." And Ronda responded by saying, "Lawyer up, bitch. You're about to have plenty to sue me for." And then she puts a whole bunch of hashtags in there, which just killed the whole thing. Now, is it possible, could it be, that Ronda Rousey worked herself into a shoot? Or as Hulk Hogan once famously tweeted, "Good night, Hulkamaniacs and jabroni marks without a life that don't know it's a work when you work a work and work yourself into a shoot, marks." Is it possible? Sure. Did she work a work and work herself into a shoot? I swear to God, that tweet will never get old, and I will always look for an opportunity to quote it. If I could frame it and put it on my wall, I would. So did she work a work and work herself into a shoot? No, I don't believe she did. And I saw some news stories suggesting that, you know, people hearing from sources that Ronda really is upset. I don't buy it. There may be people saying that. There may be people behind the scenes whispering that, wanting the websites and the newsletters and that to pick it up. "Hey, this is real. Hey, Ronda's really, really upset." I don't buy it. I call BS on that. This is more compelling to me than anything that I've seen, really, on WWE television, most things anyway, which is why, for as upset as WWE might be, and supposedly they are upset with some of the language being used. And by the way, you know, we hear Becky say bitch and stuff like that. To be fair to her, if you really look at these tweets, it's pretty one-sided where this language is coming from here, and it's not from Becky Lynch. She was posting stuff that frankly was kind of boring, and then Ronda was responding and just kind of going off the reservation here. But look, for as upset as WWE might be, they have to be thrilled at the attention that this thing is getting. It's all about promoting WrestleMania. They kind of got away from this for a while. Things were kind of quiet between the two of them. And they put Charlotte in there. Now Charlotte's going to be in the match. And then everything just sort of exploded again this week. Charlotte is a complete afterthought. I'm looking at this going, "Charlotte who?" And they're reminding people of why it is that the match at WrestleMania should be one-on-one, Becky Lynch against Ronda Rousey. I think it's just a case of these two doing a very convincing job, to the point where I'm getting emails from people suggesting, "Oh, do you really think they hate one another?" That's what you're supposed to think. That means they're doing their job. The cussing, I think the cussing makes it feel more authentic. If WWE had control over all of these tweets, you'd have Becky telling Ronda, "I can't wait to kick your arse in front of the WWE universe and get my title back at WrestleMania," and then she would throw 17 hashtags in at the end. My only issue with this, and this is where I have a big problem with this, and why I had posted something, I wrote delete this in one tweet under Ronda's first tweet that she posted. I hated the use of the word fake and talking about scripts. I know kayfabe is dead, pretty much, and it's 2019, that fourth wall has long been shattered and knocked down, but I still like to think that there's some places you don't go. Because suspension of disbelief still means something to some people. It still means something to me as a fan. And those two words, I think, should pretty much be off limits. In the context that they were used. You want to use the word fake in some other context? Oh, fake news, fake tits, go ahead. Be my guest. But that's not how she was using it here. You know, and when Becky joked about Vince Russo, bro, I laughed. But it was true. I hated when Russo did the same thing in WCW. The whole thing with Goldberg and Scott Steiner. Goldberg refused to follow the script. Now what's going to happen? You know your product is in the toilet when the only way for you to try to draw an audience on pay-per-view is to basically tell them, hey, what we do here is fake, but this is real. And you want to tune in to see this. You know you're heading in the wrong direction when you feel compelled that this is the only way to get people interested in your product. So I didn't like it when WCW did it, and I don't like it when people do it now. And I can't criticize Russo doing it and give it a pass here, because, well, you know, I like this storyline, so hey, thumbs up. No, it still sucks. She could have just as easily, by the way, have said, Rebecca Quinn, when I see you on Monday, I swear to God, I'm going to beat the living shit out of you. See? Still effective. Still conveys the same message, but without resorting to the F word and the S word. And I'm not talking about fuck and shit. I'm talking about fake and script. Ronda calling Becky's armbar fake and nonsensical is hilarious to me. Ronda Rousey obviously does know how to apply a legitimate armbar. It's what made her famous, and she hurt a lot of people with it. And it looked good when she first used it on Stephanie last year at WrestleMania. Over the past year, it has gotten progressively worse. Ronda is in no position to be mocking somebody else's fake armbar. But maybe she's mocking it because they're setting up for her to tap out to it at WrestleMania. Although, calling it fake and it looks terrible and then tapping out to it, I don't know if that does more to hurt Ronda or to help Becky. But Raw Monday night, we had a tag match. It was Rousey and Natty against the Riot Squad. Becky came out of the crowd with the crutch, and there was a big scuffle between the two of them. Becky was arrested. They took her over to a local incarceration facility. Now, this whole idea of Stone Cold Becky Lynch, right? A lot of people immediately were making comparisons, myself included, because it was hard to ignore the sight of her being cuffed and taken away, because we saw that so many times with Stone Cold Steve Austin back in the day. And there's been a lot of people lately who have made those comparisons. Austin himself even chimed in on it and said, I see some of myself in Becky Lynch and what they're doing with her lately. And I love how much it seems to upset some people whenever I make a reference to any similarity whatsoever between Austin and Becky, which Austin, again, himself has done, but people get so upset by this. Like when I do it, when other people do it, it's like blasphemy to them. I'm not saying that Becky Lynch is just like Stone Cold or the next Stone Cold. Nobody is. Nobody can ever be. Only that they are clearly borrowing from the Austin playbook to try to get her over as an anti-authority, you know, badass. Maybe it's working with some of you, maybe it's not. But just the mere mention of the two of them in the same sentence sets people off. If you can't see that they're borrowing from Stone Cold in the fall of 1997... when he was too hurt to wrestle, then you're blind. I'm just pointing out the obvious. I'm not bashing it. That's all I'm saying. It worked for Austin. Maybe it'll work for Becky too. But the Rhonda and Stephanie segment was also a little bit of a cliffhanger that they gave us, because she tried to get Stephanie to reinstate Becky, and she said no. And she said, well, you know what? If that's the case, then basically I can't be the champion anymore. And she threw the belt down and she walked out. And the question now is the title officially vacant? Or is it going to be a case where on Raw tomorrow night, because Charlotte said on SmackDown, I'm coming to Raw Monday night and Vince McMahon is going to crown me the new Raw Women's Champion. Is it a case? And I almost forgot that Charlotte was even involved in this. She's come off like the third wheel here this week. I think it'll be a case where right before that happens and right before Vince officially gives her the championship and makes her the champion, Becky will come out or Rhonda will come out. I don't know if technically Rhonda will be considered stripped. I suspect not, and she'll still be the champion, and that we're not going to get a match for the vacant title. Although, you know, somewhere in the shadows, vacant is just licking his chops here. Nobody's held more titles in this company than that guy. But Charlotte will be on Raw tomorrow night. We'll see what happens with this next chapter here in the storyline. Because she really did come off this week like the forgotten party in this entire thing. And they have to reestablish her, you know, as being a key part of this match. Because she is going to be part of this match. Whether you like it or not, she is going to be part of this match at WrestleMania. They have a poll up on WWE.com right now, where they did as of 2 days ago, asking the fans, which match would you prefer to see at WrestleMania? Triple Threat with Ronda Rousey, Charlotte Flair, and Becky Lynch, a singles match between Rousey and Flair, or the original match of Becky Lynch against Ronda Rousey. Triple Threat had 11% last I checked. Rousey versus Charlotte had 5%. Rousey versus Becky, one-on-one, running away with 83% of the vote. And I realize, by the way, that adds up to 99. But those are the results of the poll. Don't look at me. It's not my fault. We had the Revival. The new Raw Tag Team Champions lost yet again to the new NXT guys. That makes 2 weeks in a row. This past week, it was Aleister Black and Ricochet beating them in, I think it was a 4-minute match. Now, there were some last-minute rewrites done to Raw because of an injury, and that may have been the case here with the Revival losing again. And the injury, unfortunately, is to Tommaso Ciampa, and it could be very, very bad. Originally, there was going to be a Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match on Raw this past week, and the I don't even know that the Revival were going to be involved in the match. It might have been four other teams, including DIY, but Tommaso Ciampa is injured. It's said to be a neck injury. And not a knee injury, which is what you would think after that spot with Sheamus on SmackDown 2 weeks ago. He's been dealing with this neck injury for at least a month now, maybe longer, and I take it that it's clearly not getting any better. He is currently not cleared to wrestle. As of this moment, if that holds, he's not wrestling a takeover. And that is potentially a disaster, given how big of a role he is going to have on that New York TakeOver show over WrestleMania weekend. Plus, he just got called up to the main roster, so the timing for him could not be any worse. He's getting the biggest break of his career here. Now, hopefully he does not need surgery, and it's something that can be remedied by taking some time off and rehab. Otherwise, neck injury, that sounds like something that could keep him out for a very long time. So I hope that he's cleared and healthy enough to work the TakeOver show. He can drop the championship, which I think is a foregone conclusion now. And then after that, he can take whatever time he needs to heal up and rest. That's what I hope. Meanwhile, EC3 lost to Apollo Crews on the main event taping before Raw on Monday night. EC3 lost to Apollo. Apollo Crews. Looks like EC3 needs a reboot to EC4. EC3's push so far, I was trying to think of an analogy here, and this one just works so well. EC3's push so far has been like a Skype update. You just want to keep it the way it is. There's nothing wrong with it. Leave it alone. But nope, you load it up, and there's another fucking update. And the latest update completely fucked everything up. You didn't ask for it. It just happened. They did it anyway. And somehow, they managed to make it worse. That's EC3 in WWE. He is a walking, breathing Skype update. He actually had some cool features before, and they decided to take those features away, even though you didn't ask them to. I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know if they're just buying time, if they have a big idea for him and they figure, well, it won't matter. Nobody watches main event anyway. You could put him in there, he could wrestle a fucking broomstick, nobody will know. And when the time is right, we'll give him a big push. But then why even call him up in the first place? Why not save him for the night after WrestleMania, if you had no plans for him? SmackDown was live from Charlotte, North Carolina. 2,400 votes in the Twitter poll. 86% thumbs up, 14% thumbs down. Another really high, really positive score for a WWE show this week. They had the opening contract signing for the WWE Championship match at Fastlane. It was supposed to be Daniel Bryan signing and Kofi Kingston signing. Bryan sat there the entire time. He never said a single word. He just sat there and watched. Shane and Stephanie were out there. They're heaping praise upon Kofi. They're so happy for him for this opportunity. They mention how he now has 2 pinfall wins over the champion. That plus his performance in the Elimination Chamber match has earned him the opportunity to challenge for the title at Fastlane. Kofi talked about waiting 11 years for this moment. This is his first one-on-one title shot for the WWE Championship. Bryan signed the contract first, and before Kofi could do so, out walked Vince McMahon. He just could not help himself. He saw a black man about to sign the contract, and he just had to come out and put a stop to that. He said he needs to deliver a challenger and a match that is box office. And Kofi, well, he just isn't that guy. He found somebody more talented and more qualified, and he introduced Kevin Owens as Kofi's replacement at Fastlane. The same Kevin Owens who once assaulted him on this very show and headbutted him so hard, he busted him open. Vince is a very forgiving guy. I mean, I figured Owens was the guy getting the shot at WrestleMania, but to call him big box office, it's quite the stretch. Owens signed the contract. Kofi sulked off. Xavier and Big E were furious. So it appears they have swapped the title matches for Fastlane and WrestleMania. And instead of KO challenging Bryan at Mania, and he still might, there is still the chance we could get a triple threat match with Bryan, Owens, and Kingston. But he'll get the first shot while they do the screwed babyface angle with Kofi, which I think is really smart. This makes him a completely sympathetic character, and it's going to get people even more invested in wanting to see him not just go to WrestleMania and get a championship match, but wanting to see him badly win the championship. It's smart. And actually, in light of this, in light of this little twist that they gave us on Tuesday, I think there's a much better chance that Kofi walks out of MetLife Stadium now with that title. Doesn't just get the shot and lose, actually wins the championship. And if Kofi wins the title and gets the happy ending, and Becky Lynch wins the title and gets the happy ending, you all know what that means. Brock Lesnar retains the Universal Championship. One happy ending is fine. 2 happy endings is pushing it, but expecting 3 happy endings from Vince McMahon, I think that's asking a bit too much. This is not some Asian massage parlor in Florida. I don't think that we're getting the hat trick at WrestleMania with all 3 baby faces getting the big emotional win. So pick your poison. What's more important to you? Do you want Kofi Kingston to win? Do you want Becky Lynch to win? Or do you want Seth Rollins to win? So they get that belt off of Brock Lesnar. Because now that Roman Reigns is coming back, and given what happened last year with Reigns and Lesnar, and everybody thought Reigns is obviously going to win, and he didn't, I'm not convinced that they take the title off Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. There's always sweet Saudi money 3. You can't see Bumblebee if they can get John Cena, of course, to work a match on that show. Always the Saudi show coming up in May. They could do something on that show if they wanted to. I like the Kofi angle. All the people getting upset by it don't really understand pro wrestling, I don't think. Kofi is going to get his match. 100% guaranteed. He's going to get his match. They made you angry because they wanted you to feel angry. They're doing the Daniel Bryan angle, only this time Bryan is the heel. As far as them recycling the same idea they used on Raw with Vince running, you know, running out there and ruining Triple H and Stephanie's plans for the Raw women's title match, suspending Becky, inserting Charlotte, and now here, it's Stephanie and Shane overruling them and inserting Kevin Owens in place of Kofi Kingston. I talked about this earlier when I was going through the Batista stuff. This could be the part of a power struggle storyline going into WrestleMania. We'll see how it affects Kevin Owens, because it sure seemed like he was coming back as a babyface to challenge Bryan at WrestleMania. Him walking out there as Vince McMahon's handpicked guy is not going to earn him any brownie points with the fans, who now are pissed off that, hey, you screwed over Kofi Kingston. You screwed over the guy that we like. He basically played babyface anyway, Owens did, for the rest of the show. They teamed him up with Kofi in the main event. They even had him beat Bryan. Owens beat Bryan with the Stone Cold Stunner. We'll see if that lasts beyond Fastlane. By the way, how about the Stunner being used again as a finish and not as a setup move or used for a near fall? Stone Cold was on I know he was on Kevin's ass playfully, but he was on KO for using the Stunner at the Royal Rumble 2 years ago when he wrestled Roman Reigns. This was when they had that match at the Alamo Dome and he hit the Stunner out of nowhere and I think Roman kicked out. And he was like, you know, dude, you got to win with that move. You can't just bastardize it by having it as some kind of a setup move for a near fall. And I wonder if the pop-up powerbomb becomes a setup move for Owens in place of him now maybe using the Stunner as an actual finish. I mean, look, he's a big Stone Cold fan. That's why, you know, he emulates him and uses the move. And we know Austin likes Kevin Owens. I think it would be cool to see the move used as a finish again. He needs more airtime on it, on the execution. He's got to work on it a little bit, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad Stunner. He's got to really dive up into it, you know? And of course, it's all in how the guy taking the move sells it. Daniel Bryan is no Scott Hall. He is no The Rock when it comes to that. But I think it would be very cool to see that move brought back. The Hardy Boys are back. It was supposed to be Johnny Gargano against Cesaro, but I assume with Ciampa's injury, they wanted him out there. And since he wasn't cleared to be out there, they changed the match. Matt looks good. He's gotten himself into the best shape he's been in probably since his V1 days. They beat the bar. They had a third-year option on their WWE contracts. The company just rolled it over. So the Hardys are not going anywhere for at least another year. And you know what? They're a great team to have in that tag team division. Matt can be more useful now to them as a tag team wrestler than as Broken Matt or Woken Matt. Because they need tag teams. And the Hardys have equity. You know, they've been around for a long time. We haven't seen them in a while. So there'll be this little honeymoon period here with them. And I think down the road, DIY against the Hardys would be a hell of a fun program. And we had a United States Open Challenge where R-Truth said that anybody who wants a title shot, come on out. And we had Andrade Cien Almas come out. And we had Rey Mysterio come out. We ended up with a triple threat match where I thought for sure Andrade was taking this title. I said, here we go. All right, here we go. Here's where Andrade wins the U.S. title. And then they build to a match with him and Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania. And they still could do that. They could still do that. There's still time. But Truth retained the title. He stole a quick pin on Mysterio after Rey laid out Almas with the 619. So Truth retained the championship. But he's doing another open challenge this Tuesday. We'll see how that goes. Charlotte, she was on this show. She said she'll be on Raw Monday night to have Vince McMahon crown her the new Raw Women's Champion. I hate that they have Charlotte on SmackDown openly talking about going to Raw to be crowned the new Raw Women's Champion when at the same time the SmackDown Women's Champion is nowhere to be found. Even though she wasn't on the show, it is official, by the way, it will be Asuka defending the SmackDown Women's title at Fastlane against Mandy Rose, which we all could have figured after what they did the week before. But you've got Charlotte on the blue brand talking about the red brand belt, and the blue brand champion is just MIA. It's wrong. I know the focus right now is Ronda and Becky and Charlotte, but They're doing Asuka dirty here. They've been doing this for a while. Ever since she beat Becky at the Royal Rumble, you would think, wow, they actually had her beat Becky Lynch. I wonder where this is leading. Well, this is where it's leading. this is what that built to. Hey, Mania Crawl is back. It is the annual event that coincides with WrestleMania every year. You may have seen Jamie on that WWE Network special for WrestleMania 34 talking about Mania Crawl. They interviewed him. He organizes the event every year. He does a hell of a job with it. This year's event is going to be taking place WrestleMania Sunday, April 7th, starting at 12 noon. It is 100% free for the fans, by the fans, with the goal of raising money for Connor's cure. This year, the event takes place in Hoboken, New Jersey. That's just 15 minutes from MetLife Stadium. So if you're going to hop in your car and drive to MetLife for WrestleMania, it's a 15-minute car ride. Anybody can show up, but they are offering VIP packages that include a Mania Crawl t-shirt, koozie, and bus transportation to the stadium if you are going to WrestleMania. Act fast, because they only have 55 VIP tickets available for purchase, and that was to start with. I don't know where they're at now. You can also buy your Mania Crawl gear at maniacrawl.com and follow at Mania Crawl on Twitter and Instagram for all of the latest updates.
Let me remind you, and I think a lot of people here will agree, NXT is way better than the WWE.
Shout out to Adrian, longtime listener of the show. He's the one who emailed me in March of 2013. To tell me about WWE's newest Australian signee, Matt Silva. He had been singing his praises for over 4 years. He told me that this guy has the it factor. WWE is going to be flushing a lot down the toilet, he told me, if they give him some kind of outrageous gimmick. He is a badass, and that's how he should be booked. Then they gave him the name Buddy Murphy, and Adrian flipped his lid. But... he was right about Matt Silva in that he is a standout who could be an even bigger star once he leaves 205 Live. 205 Live is a good place for him right now, although it's purgatory if he stays there for too long. But he's the champion, so he's always going to be featured at the very least in, you know, a Cruiserweight Championship match, even if it's just on the pre-show. I would say a few more months there, but not too much longer. It's going to be time to bounce him off there and onto Raw or SmackDown, and we have a shakeup coming up in mid-April. They're doing another one of these superstar shakeups. That might be a good time. He can drop the Cruiserweight title to somebody at WrestleMania, and I would have him in that draft. I would shake things up, and I would have him go to Raw or SmackDown, because, you know, much the way they did with Mustafa Ali, he's that kind of talent, but he's even bigger. He looks the part. He's a great wrestler, and I think he can be a big asset to either roster. So I think Matt is absolutely, or Adrian rather, is absolutely right in that respect. Now, the reason I bring this up, why am I saying this? Because Adrian has brought to my attention another Australian name signed earlier this month by WWE, a gentleman named Elliot Sexton, who happens to be the boyfriend of current NXT star Dakota Kai. He also linked me to a funny YouTube series that he has called Trophy Life, based around their relationship. Jonah Rock is the other Australian name they signed. He and Sexton were once a tag team called Sex Rock. We'll see if they sign them to be a tag team or if they're each going to be doing their own thing. Sexton is 6'5", 250. So if he can wrestle, and he clearly has some personality based off these videos if you watch them, he will do well. So thank you to Adrian for bringing him to my attention. And maybe 4 years from now, he'll be a big star and I can look back on your email and give you praise again. I'll have to remember to look back. I'm sure you'll remind me. You won't let me forget. Gargano and Ciampa from NXT this week. They opened the show. We have DIY reunited yet again, which is kind of weird saying that, given that they've already been reunited on the main roster for the last few weeks. But I guess two different worlds, right? Worlds colliding. You got to ignore what happens on the right when you're watching the left, which is very difficult to do sometimes. But they are now officially reunited for the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. Because with Gargano losing his North American Championship, he has no title anymore. Of course, Ciampa is the NXT champion. He says, well, I think you and I should take those tag team titles. And he got Johnny Gargano to shake hands. And we got a segment outside of Full Sail later on. They were leaving together. And as soon as they walk outside, there's Candice LeRae. There's Johnny's wife and Champa Bales. He's like, all right, I'm out of here. And she is not happy with her husband. And Johnny is insisting to her, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. Now, the Dusty Classic brackets are out. The brackets have DIY in the opening round against Undisputed Era. Aleister Black and Ricochet against Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel. Mustache Mountain, Tyler Bate and Trent Seven. I almost said Tyler Perry and Trent Seven. What a team that would be. Against the Street Profits. And Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch take on the Forgotten Sons. I am torn between the Street Profits and Aleister Black and Ricochet as far as who wins the entire thing. I want the Street Profits to win, but as far as who I think is going to win, I think it's either them or Black and Ricochet. It's hard to choose. I don't think DIY makes it to the finals because I think it's going to be Gargano against Ciampa if Ciampa can wrestle at TakeOver in New York, and they still need a few weeks to build to that. Black and Ricochet, they've been getting a lot of time on Raw and SmackDown. They're still unbeaten. They've been getting a nice little push these last few weeks. I just can't see them losing, at least until the finals. In the finals, if they make it that far and they lose, not a big deal. But the Street Profits need to at least make it into the second round of this thing, if not go all the way. I like that they were more aggressive the last time we saw them on TV. It looked like they were kind of circling back to them to give them some kind of push that they haven't gotten in a while. So I think it's one of those two, challenging the War Raiders at TakeOver for the tag team titles. If they don't have anything planned for Ricochet and Black for WrestleMania, then I think they're most definitely going to be on that TakeOver card. They're not gonna leave them off WrestleMania but not have them work the NXT show. So they're going to be on there in some way. We had a match here between Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic. They had a really fun match on NXT this week. Dijak is going to be a star. I mean, that's easy to see. And Lee will do well, too. But, you know, it's Dijak, his size and the look. There's no reason for this guy not to have major success when he... Well, I mean, I should stop myself. I could think of one reason. EC3 is feeling that right now. But in theory, if you look at this guy and you know he can wrestle, we know he can work. But if you just look at him, you can't help but think that he should do well. He should go far on Raw. He should go far on SmackDown. Keith Lee, by the way, has new theme music. I think he laid down the vocals for it himself. I'm not 100% sure about that. I have no opinion on it yet. It was the first time I was hearing the new music. I think I need to hear more of it. So I would say right now I am indifferent. I will say he is no Shawn Michaels. He is no Shawn Michaels on vocals. He landed on his feet taking a monkey flip in this match, which is pretty impressive for a guy as big as he is. Dijak, and I'm just going to call him Dijak because I hate the other name and it's just easier to say Dijak. He hit an acai moonsault onto Lee, landed on the ramp. Neither man could answer the 10 count. Both were counted out. The crowd was not happy about this. They chanted, let them fight. They had to be separated. I hope they hold off either on doing the rematch until TakeOver, or if they do another rematch before then, make that match also end up in a no decision of some kind, maybe a disqualification, double DQ, and then build to a third match at TakeOver with a no DQ, no countout stipulation. Because that match in front of that crowd in Brooklyn to open the TakeOver show, I think, would be sensational. Sasha Banks and Bayley made their return to NXT as the new WWE Women's Tag Team Champions. They got a huge welcome back. We saw Izzy in the crowd. Izzy was crying. What was it, 5 years ago? 6 years ago? When I first said one day Izzy is going to join the WWE roster and she will turn on Bayley. She will viciously attack Bayley. She might even leave her bloodied on the floor. That day is coming. Oh, yes, it is. That day is coming. So they're out there and they're talking about, look, we said we're going to defend these titles everywhere. We're going to defend them on Raw. We're going to defend them on SmackDown. And yeah, we're going to defend them in NXT too. And all I can think is I would love to see Sasha Banks and Bayley defending those tag team titles against Kairi Sane and Io Shirai. Although I guess Sasha and Bayley defending against Shayna's friends at some point would make sense too. So lots of options, lots of possibilities. I like the fact that they're having floating champions. This is how I was hoping they would do it. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it keeps things interesting. It makes them feel like a bigger deal. I like it. Now we just got to get them on one of the takeover shows defending those titles. Speaking of Shayna Baszler, she put down Mia Yim in the main event. They had a very good match. Mia was selling the ankle and Shayna was just, you know, brutalizing it and stomping on it. And, you know, it's kind of the trademark of her matches. She'll pick a body part, you know, the elbow, the arm, the ankle, and she'll work it over. In the end, she tapped out to the Karafuta Clutch. And that was your NXT episode for this past week. Overall, a good show. Before I get to the mailbag, I promised earlier I was going to give one person the chance to win two gold VIP tickets to the Shenanigans Party in New York City, WrestleMania weekend, Saturday night, April 6th. That's immediately after the Ring of Honor New Japan show at MSG and the WWE Hall of Fame. These tickets will get you and a guest free drinks and access to the VIP lounge with all of the official guests who are scheduled to attend. All you have to do, it's very simple, be the first person to tweet me, at Solomonster, with the correct answer to this question. Chyna is going into the WWE Hall of Fame this year. She's part of D-Generation X. She'll be part of the DX induction. She's also a two-time Intercontinental Champion. She beat Jeff Jarrett in a Good Housekeeping match to win the title for the first time. Then she was co-champion with Chris Jericho, but WWE does not officially recognize that as its own separate reign. Who did Chyna beat? Who did she pin to win her second Intercontinental title? If you are the first person to tweet me the correct answer, the name of the person that she pinned, you win the tickets. So there you go. You can also send in your mailbag questions, as always, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Bradley from Atlanta. What do you think of Jim Ross saying Charlotte is a modern-day Hulk Hogan? To me, it's stupid to compare the two inside the ring and out. Boy, people beat the piss out of JR for that one. I'm going to defend him a little bit on this. First of all, I think it was a poor analogy for him to use, and I think he invited the criticism onto himself. So, you know, it's kind of his own fault. But I think I understand what he meant by it. I pulled the quote, and I want to read it here so everybody has context and knows what we're talking about. This is what he said about Charlotte. She is the female version of what Hulk Hogan was to WWE in the 80s. She's that strong, she's that over, that big, that impressive. So that was his quote about Charlotte. I take that to mean WWE built everything around Hulk Hogan in the 80s. They banked everything on him. If they had a men's and a women's division, he was built up as the star of the men's division. He was their poster child. He was the champion. He was the one involved in all the big feuds. He was their cash cow. Charlotte doesn't do the kind of business that Hulk Hogan did. Nobody in the company does. That would be absurd to even insinuate such a thing. You would have to be on bath salts to say something so stupid. But I think what he was getting at is that today, with the women, that role is occupied by Charlotte. With the women, every big thing has to revolve around her. Look at the WrestleMania main event. They couldn't leave well enough alone and just let it be Ronda Rousey against Becky Lynch. What did they do? Well, we have to add Charlotte. It's like WWE has all these meals that they cook. They had a great meal. They had prime rib with Becky and Charlotte. What does Vince McMahon do? Well, sprinkle in some Charlotte. But you don't need to. But of course, in his mind, Charlotte is the premier star in the women's division, and they're going to have their first WrestleMania women's main event, probably. They're going to end the show, and you can't have a WrestleMania main event for the first time with the women. Unless Charlotte Flair is involved. Everything revolves around her. You know, who was the first person to beat Asuka? Charlotte Flair. Who was the star with the most women's title on the main roster of the current full-time performers? I'm not talking all time. But right now, who has the most women's championships of all the women out of all the ones on the main roster, Charlotte Flair. I think she's already up to, what, 6, 7? By the time she's done, she'll have at least 16, like her father did. You know they're building to that. Who's the female star they feature the most? At panels and conferences and media events, Charlotte Flair. In fact, I saw that they announced the WWE panel at South by Southwest next weekend. It's about women's empowerment with Stephanie McMahon and Triple H. And who else? Charlotte Flair. Not Sasha Banks. Not Becky Lynch. Not even Ronda Rousey. Charlotte Flair. So when you really think about it, she is positioned as the Hogan of the women's division. I think where JR made the mistake is by saying that she's, quote, that over. Because the minute people heard that, they were out with the pitchforks. Nobody on the current roster is over the way that Hulk Hogan was. And it might help to stop comparing everybody to the big names of the past, because the biggest names of today are not even close to being as big as the biggest names of the past. And all it does is make everybody today look so much smaller by comparison. You know, when I poke fun of Stone Cold Becky Lynch, people say, oh, you're guilty of the same thing. All right, well, maybe sometimes I am. But when I talk about Stone Cold Becky Lynch, for example, I'm not actually trying to compare Becky to being the next Stone Cold. But they definitely are borrowing from the Austin playbook with her right now. But I think that they would all benefit, Becky included, they would all benefit from not being compared to those guys because it doesn't help their cause. Jesse from Tacoma, Washington. What are your thoughts on WWE hiring Dana Warrior to be part of the creative team? Does she even have any writing experience? Not to my knowledge, she doesn't. Ryan Satin broke that story a few days ago. The Ultimate Warrior's widow, Dana, was at Raw Monday night. She was sitting in on the production meeting and getting a feel for the creative process. The idea is that she can help bring a female perspective to the writing team, which already has some female writers. She wouldn't be the only one. PW Insider did confirm they, believe it or not, have other female writers on staff. It's not a permanent role, but if she does well, it could potentially turn into one. So this is like a trial run. They do that sometimes with their agents and their producers, coaches. They bring coaches down to the Performance Center for a week at a time. Sometimes they come back, sometimes they don't. But here's the deal. They are clearly putting more of a focus on their female talent. The women are likely headlining WrestleMania this year for the first time. So that tells you everything you need to know about that. It makes sense for them to bring in more female voices. And Dana Warrior does a lot of other work with WWE, you know, charity type stuff, whatever. And she's become very familiar with and very friendly with a lot of the talent, including some of the female stars. Through those relationships, and I don't know how close she really is with them. She's around them, she's aware of them, but depending on how close those relationships and friendships really are, being around them at events, maybe she can bring a perspective to the table that Vince McMahon wouldn't be able to, or that a random writer from Hollywood or the TV world who doesn't know who these women are, and maybe they're not even a big fan of the product, a perspective that that person wouldn't be able to bring either. Maybe she knows things about them that he doesn't. But here's the other big thing. Because it was very easy for people to jump all over this and, oh my God, this doesn't make any sense. And it kind of doesn't make sense when you first hear it. But here's the thing I think people need to understand and consider here. For so long now, we have all talked about how boring and formulaic, or just plain awful, the television shows can be. Especially on Monday nights. SmackDown less so, but SmackDown's not always a winner either. Okay, Bruce Pritchard was just rehired. Are his contributions going to change the product? Probably not, especially since it sounds like his role may have been a bit overplayed. But even if he wasn't overplayed, and he is going to be a major force on the creative team, are things really going to radically change? Probably not. There might be some changes, though. He might be able to, you know, talk to Vince McMahon or submit ideas on paper as a consultant or whatever his role is that make them think twice about something that they're going to do or is an idea that they didn't think of. Huh, you know what? That's actually an interesting idea. Let's work it into the show. Dana Warrior, are there people more qualified than she is to be on the creative team? Yeah. Yeah, there are. But it's something new, is it not? Isn't that what you've been asking for? Isn't that what we've been begging for so long? Creative changes? Do you have a list of specific people you'd like to send in? And don't put Jim Cornette's name down because he's not going there. Now he's with MLW. Do you have a specific list of names that you would like to run creative in WWE? Do you even know 10 writers? Because I don't. Not 10 current writers who I think could, you know, put them all together and, oh, you got this great dream team of creative writers. All I know is that this is a show that desperately needs changes. It desperately needs a newer, fresher vision at the top, and that really is the key. The real change that needs to be made is not going to be made. We all know what that is. He's not going anywhere, and so you just have to accept it. You either watch the product and accept it, or you don't, and you give up. A lot of people don't want to give up. They have hope. They want things to get better. They want things to change. Things ebb and flow, and you know, you have your dead periods, you have your hot periods. They're waiting for that next hot period, that next boom period to come. People don't want to give up, but they want change. Because it's painful on a lot of weeks to sit through some of these television shows. And so here's Dana Warrior getting a shot, potentially, at being able to contribute to the creative team. Why shit on the woman before she even has a chance to offer any ideas? Why not give her a chance and let's see how she does? You cannot, on the one hand, complain about how creatively bankrupt the product is and then immediately shit all over any new hire that they make, although there is one, and thankfully they haven't done that yet. But they're making moves. Maybe it won't work, maybe it will. What's the alternative? To do nothing? I wish her luck. I hope that she can somehow make the show better. I mean, think about this. She was married to the Ultimate Warrior for 15 years. You gotta think that she's got some pretty wild ideas floating around in her head. Jamel, in Deer Park, New York, who would you say is the most attractive WWE diva of all time, past and present? I would have to say Tori Wilson. I think Tori is one of the most attractive women in the world, not just in wrestling. Craig from Chicago, as a black man myself, I want different types of people to win the world title if given the chance to. But something about this Kofi Kingston push just does not sit well with me. I understand the people are really behind him, and WWE could really use some new top stars other than the usual faces. But this Kofi push just feels very rushed and out of nowhere just to give Bryan an opponent for WrestleMania. I get that Mustafa Ali could have been that guy had he not gotten hurt, but to me, he really was the best option. Now that Kofi is in this spot when he probably was not in the plans at all, everybody is getting behind him, even though he hasn't done much to stand out on his own. And after 11 years of being on the roster, he still has not given me a reason to care if he wins the title or not. Does this make me ungrateful or wrong for not getting behind his push? Absolutely not. Just because you have no interest in seeing Kofi Kingston win the WWE title does not make you a bad person, regardless of what skin color you might be. Just like if you don't think Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch, you know, and Charlotte, almost forgot about her, should headline WrestleMania, because it's not the match that you're looking forward to the most. To say that does not make you a misogynist. I happen to think it is the real main event, and that it should headline the show, but that's my opinion. Other people may not feel the same way. 6 weeks ago, Kofi Kingston was tossing pancakes into the crowd. I can understand why some people might not think he should be in the WWE Championship match at WrestleMania. Why they might think that, you know, hey, they should take the time to build to something like that. To tell that story and not feel like it's being rushed. If they get away from the comedy and they tell the story of a man here who has given 11 years to the company, who's never gotten a one-on-one match before at WrestleMania, let alone a one-on-one championship match. He's never had a one-on-one match at WrestleMania. And here he is now trying to live his dream. I think that's a compelling story to tell. And yeah, it's being rushed pretty quickly, but I don't really have too much of an issue with that myself. That's a compelling story to me. That's a story I can get behind. And they seem to be doing that. I have no problem doing the Rocky story with Kofi Kingston and having him win the title at WrestleMania and giving people a feel-good moment. I'm happy for the guy. I really am. Hard work pays off. Sometimes when you least expect it, sometimes when it wasn't necessarily intended. But hard work does pay off. And yes, to a lot of black wrestling fans, that would be a very big deal for him to win that title. And I'm going to take myself out of the equation when it comes to that because I can't relate to that. So who am I to pass judgment, or who are you to pass judgment? I don't mean you, Craig. I just mean the general you. And say how those people should or shouldn't feel about it. You know, me, I just want the best possible match for the championship at WrestleMania. Same thing with the women's stuff. I don't want the women headlining WrestleMania just so they can say, oh, hey, look, the women are headlining WrestleMania. Look at us, everybody. I want the women to headline WrestleMania because it's been the most compelling story since the summer when Becky turned on Charlotte at SummerSlam. And then the Rousey match was made, Nia punched Becky in the face, and it made her even more popular, and there's no other match on that card right now that belongs in that main event spot. With the WWE title, had things been played out differently? If Samoa Joe was a badass babyface who didn't lose every fucking time he's in the ring, he would have been a viable challenger for Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. If Mustafa Ali, who just came back, but if he didn't get hurt, I loved the underdog story they were starting to tell with him, but neither of those things happened. Kofi lucked into a spot that was not intended for him, and he's making the most of it. You know, for years, Xavier Woods has said that it was his mission, him and Big E both, it was their personal mission to make sure that Kofi Kingston one day became the World Heavyweight Champion. His goal was not I want to see myself become the world champion. He wanted to make sure that his friend, Kofi, became the world champion because he deserves it, in his words. This is what he was saying 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Well, now that day has come. But if you don't agree with it, or if you're not fully on board with it, you don't have to feel the need to apologize for it. I'll get behind Kofi because I like the guy and I happen to think him winning at WrestleMania is going to mean far more to certain people than Daniel Bryan retaining is going to mean in the grand scheme of things. Plus, you know, how can you not root for the guy in this storyline now that he's been screwed over by Vince McMahon? It was smart what they did on Tuesday. But you also need to understand that for the last 11 years, WWE has conditioned me, the viewer, to not take Kofi Kingston seriously as any kind of threat to the world title. He's won lots of other titles. He's had his memorable save spots in the Royal Rumble, which is completely played out, by the way. I think they need to just stop with that. And he got a new lease on life when the New Day took off. Now he plays with pancakes. That's what he's been doing. You can't expect every fan to suddenly wake up and be on the train to Kofi Mania. You need to give them some time to come around to the idea. Some people may never come around to the idea. I just want the best possible match at WrestleMania. That's either going to be Daniel Bryan against Kofi Kingston, or Daniel Bryan defending in a triple threat against Kofi Kingston and Kevin Owens. I think it's pretty safe to say Kofi Kingston is going to WrestleMania, and I think he's got a damn good shot at becoming the champion. But just because you don't think he should be, like Craig, that doesn't make you ungrateful. That doesn't make you wrong. Because you can't tell me that if I could time travel in my DeLorean back a year, or 2 years, or 3 years, and you asked me, hey, who's wrestling for the WWE title at WrestleMania 35? And I said Kofi Kingston. You can't tell me that you wouldn't have laughed in my face. Or that you wouldn't have made some kind of sarcastic remark about, oh, how far the company has fallen. And you would have said the same thing about Jinder Mahal becoming WWE champion? And that's not the fans' fault, although I'm sure Paige would blame us for that too. It's not our fault. That's just how he's been positioned for all these years. When you're slotted at a certain level for so long, people get used to seeing you at that level for so long. And you just can't flip a switch and expect that everybody is going to be on board with the idea. And if they're not, you know, make them feel like that somehow makes them a bad person. That's horse shit. You support whatever wrestler that you want to support. It's a television show. Be thankful that it isn't The Walking Dead, or Kofi would have been killed off 5 seasons ago. Martin, in Fort Wayne, Indiana. With the news of Anthem erasing all of the old GFW shows, do you know some of the matches or stars that were part of those tapings? I love this story so much. It's just such a throwback to the LOL TNA days. Jeff Jarrett still has a lawsuit pending against Anthem, for those who don't know, which is the parent company of Impact Wrestling. Actually, this might be a new lawsuit they recently filed, separate from the one that was pending as of last year, I'm not sure. But this latest suit is for damages related to Anthem not returning the master tapes for the 16 shows that Jeff Jarrett's promotion, I put that in quotes, Global Force Wrestling, taped when they were shopping the product around for a TV deal. And this is going back now, I mean, probably 3 years. Jarrett in the suit values the tapes at $300,000 per episode. So that's 16 episodes total. So, you know, we're talking almost $5 million in damages that he's looking for. Jarrett had given Anthem the master tapes after agreeing to merge GFW with Impact. And Anthem now admits that the tapes no longer exist, and therefore they can't hand them over. Why don't they exist anymore? Because they were, quote, deleted in the normal course of business in order to free up storage space on Anthem systems. They ran out of space on their hard drives. I almost ran out of space on my old laptop. So you know what I did? I didn't erase all of my shit. I bought an external hard drive for like $50. Does Anthem not know that these devices exist? They deleted the shows in the normal course of business. Yeah, if this was 1975, maybe, you would erase over old tapes. You know how much wrestling in Mid-South and stuff like that was lost? Because back then, that's what they did. They erased over a lot of old shows. In the 1970s, that's what they did. The one asset that Impact has that might actually be worth something, and it really isn't so much the GFW stuff, it's more their own library, but that's, you know, that old stuff, those old tapes, that's the one asset they have that could actually be worth something. It's their tape library. GFW was part of that library. There were a lot of current WWE names on those shows, and they deleted them. It's just unbelievable. They did have some names you would recognize. I mean, to answer your original question, I mean, they had some names that you would recognize. You know, Jarrett was obviously on those shows. Bobby Roode, Nick Aldis, TJ Perkins, the Singh brothers back when they were still the Bollywood Boys. Kushida, who is very likely on his way to WWE. You know, they could have used that footage on their streaming service that Impact has. Or if Jarrett got back possession of the master tapes, you know, he could have sold them to WWE. And WWE could have used some of the matches as, you know, hidden gems on the WWE network eventually. Or, you know, hey, here's a throwback to when the Singh brothers, you know, were wrestling 10 years earlier as the Bollywood Boys, and here's a match you've never seen before from these random GFW tapings in 2015 or 2016. So they you know, the footage could have come in handy. But hey, Anthem needed the space. Makes you wonder what else they may have deleted in the normal course of business to free up space. Brad, in San Jose, California, with DX being in this year's Hall of Fame, I was shocked to find out Rick Rude was not included. I believe he was an integral part of the group before leaving for WCW. I was wondering why WWE did not include him with Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Billy Gunn, Road Dogg, China, and X-Pac. I disagree. I don't think he was an integral part of DX at all. He was with them for all of 3 months. He stood in the background. He never wrestled a match. He hardly said a word. You know, if you want to include every single member of DX, then yeah, you would include him and you would include Torrey. I think Torrey was a more integral part of DX than Rick Rude was. You'd have to include Mike Tyson. You'd have to include Hornswoggle. But that's not what this is. They're including the key members of the group. Rude's already in the Hall of Fame anyway. You know, so it's not like he's been completely ignored. But to call him an integral part of DX, you know, look, he may have been an original member, but that doesn't make him an important part of it. I would say if this was a collection, if DX was a collection of younger guys, newer guys, maybe Rude being part of that group could have helped give it some legitimacy. Hey, this is a name star. This is going to give this group some real legitimacy in the eyes of the fans. But they had Shawn Michaels, the top star in the company, one of the top stars in wrestling. So it's not like they needed Rick Rude as part of this group to give it any kind of legitimacy. I mean, look, I think you may hear at least one person give Rude a mention during one of their speeches, but to not include him, they have China in there. I don't think they'd want more than one dead person as part of that group. I think that's as much a part of why we're not seeing the Full Heart Foundation faction going into the Hall of Fame. Besides the Owen stuff, outside of Brett, they're all dead. They're all gone. Bret Hart standing up there all by himself would be unbelievably depressing. So Rick Rude not being part of this DX Hall of Fame induction, to me, is not a big deal. I think the people who have been talking about it and making a big deal about it it's overblown. He was not an integral part of the original DX, and I'm not bothered at all by him not being included because it's not meant to include every single member. Johnny, from Wynn, Arkansas, buy or sell on holding a championship for a long time, like Pete Dunne holding the UK title for 650 days, or regaining a championship a whole bunch of times, like John Cena being a 16-time world champion. Well, in the case of Pete Dunne, it really isn't that impressive. It's not as impressive as it sounds, because it doesn't feel like he's really had that many challengers for the title in those 650 days. I suspect that Walter is going to take it away from him in Brooklyn next month, and that'll be the end of that. But in theory, it's far more impressive to hold on to a championship for a really long time than it is to win it 10 or 15 different times. Because if you won it 10 times, that means you lost it 9 times, right? Or you lost it 10 times. I'm going to buy on holding one title for a long time, and I'm going to sell on winning one a bunch of different times. The other thing to consider is business. If the company puts their world title on me for a year, or 2 years, or 3 years, or 4 years, like they did with Hogan back in the 80s, it must be because I'm good for business. That means less these days than it did back then when Bruno or Hogan were champion, because today it's less about one big star, you know, than it was back then, and it's more about the brand, it's more about WWE. There aren't really any names that truly move the needle for WWE anymore, are there? I mean, does Brock Lesnar still move the needle? Is Ronda Rousey a huge difference maker the way that she was probably when she first came in? She still is to an extent when it comes to media, I guess, but I wouldn't call her a big mover of things in the company when it comes to business. It's not like the shows that she appears on do markedly better numbers than other shows. She's a full-time part of the roster. She's on every show like everybody else, and the ratings go up, the ratings go down. The tickets, hey, some places they'll pack them in, and a lot of places they don't. They still struggle to fill these buildings on Raw and SmackDown every week, and that includes shows that she's on. So no, I don't think Ronda Rousey moves the needle, not anymore. Who else is there? Hey, WWE is coming to town. That's how they promote these things. They don't usually, hey, Roman Reigns is coming to town. Come see the champion. They don't really do that anymore. I mean, hell, if the titles meant today what they used to mean, we wouldn't have had an absentee champion on Raw for the past 2 years. How many house shows has Brock Lesnar worked where he actually defended the title? Has he worked any? Because if he has, you can count them on one hand. But if titles really meant something, for me to hold on to a title for that long, that has to mean that I'm doing something right, doesn't it? And if nobody can beat me for it, if we're back in kayfabe mode here, I don't know, to me, that's a lot more impressive. And it's going to mean a lot more when someone finally does beat me.
just see? It's WrestleMania, baby!
Top 10 most shocking WrestleMania match outcomes. We are down to number 6. And when I think of WrestleMania, this is the match that I think of. If Hogan Andre is the biggest WrestleMania match of all time, and I don't mean business-wise, I mean just big-time, epic WrestleMania feel. And I guess some people might argue Rock Austin from WrestleMania X7. But if number one is Hogan Andre, then this match here is right behind that one at number 2. And that is Hulk Hogan against the Ultimate Warrior from WrestleMania 6. And it almost didn't happen. Hogan had filmed the movie No Holds Barred, which came out the year before. They brought in the actor who played Zeus, Tiny Lister, in the film. They brought him in to wrestle. This was their way of sort of promoting the film at the same time. We're going to bring the guy who plays Zeus into the company and we'll incorporate him into a storyline that at the same time allows us to promote this movie that we did. Now, he didn't wrestle a lot, but they brought him in to work a few pay-per-view matches. I'll be nice and say that he was very limited in what he could do. It certainly wasn't his fault if people had higher expectations for him, because I don't know that he had any wrestling training at all. And so, clearly, he was not very good at it. I mean, even as a kid, he was a scary dude. He was very scary to look at. But he couldn't do much in the ring. I knew that even then. All he did was pound his chest. It's like, how many times can one guy beat his chest, you know, and beat himself in the course of a match? I mean, every 5 seconds, he's beating himself. But he was an actor. He wasn't a wrestler. But he looked the part. And there were at least thoughts given. There was a thought given to a Hulk Hogan versus Zeus main event at WrestleMania. Thankfully, that's all it was a thought, a passing thought. That's not even the worst idea they ever had. That came the year after, when Vince wanted to turn Tugboat heel and make him Sheik Tugboat against Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 7 to play off the whole US-Iraq thing. He ended up going with Sergeant Slaughter, which was only marginally better. But imagine that, Sheik Tugboat. I can't even imagine that. But the way they set this up was actually still memorable to this day, was this one sequence in the Royal Rumble match in 1990. And it came down at one point to Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, the two biggest babyface stars in the company, one-on-one for the very first time. And they were doing it to test how the fans would react to the two biggest stars squaring off. The key here was to make sure that neither man got booed, because otherwise this wasn't going to work. This is according to Bruce Pritchard. He says, look, the idea is that you don't want either one of these guys being booed, because if it looks like they're going to side with Hogan over Warrior, or side with, which would be even worse, side with Warrior over Hogan, forget about it. It's like the old story about doing the snake pit in 86 with Hogan and Jake, which has never, ever been seen. That video has never been released. I think there is a snake pit segment on YouTube somewhere with Hulk and Jake, but that's not the one. But it's the one at that TV taping where he laid out Hogan with a DDT and got cheered. And Vince said, no, we're not going to air this. You know, we're not going to program these two together. And we never got a Hogan, Jake the Snake program because of that. Because the people cheered when Hogan got laid out. And this was in 86. Hogan was at his peak in 86, his peak of popularity. And he got, I don't know if it was so much him being booed, but he got cheered for being laid out. I guess whatever town that was, I guess was a smark city. People would say that today. That was in 86. Well, they 86'd that angle real quick, and we never got to see it. So that was the key here. How are the fans going to react? And both men got cheered. The place went nuts. I went nuts. That was awesome. That whole sequence as a kid, watching them crisscross and the double clothesline, just seeing the two of them face to face, nose to nose like that was exciting. But both guys got cheered. You know, this reminds me of the 94 Royal Rumble match, where they had the double elimination with Bret Hart and Lex Luger. And they first announced Luger the winner, and he got cheers, but there were some boos mixed in. And then another referee said, no, 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 it was Bret Hart who won. And he got massive cheers. And they did that as a test. There's not a doubt in my mind that they did that as a test. to see which one of the two the fans liked more. Clearly, they liked Bret more than Luger, and it was Bret Hart winning the championship at WrestleMania, not Lex Luger. So this was also done as a test, and they passed with flying colors, and so they moved ahead, and they set this big matchup, the two big babyface stars, one-on-one, champion versus champion, title for title. This had never been done in WWE before, where you had your two big babyface stars, both champions, putting both belts on the line in the main event of a WrestleMania. Every WrestleMania up until this point was good versus evil, right? Good guy versus bad guy, Hogan, Piper, or, you know, Hogan, Mr. T against Piper Orndorff, Hogan, Bundy in the cage, Hogan, Andre after Andre had turned on him, Savage after he turned, losing the title to Hogan. The formula had worked. The formula had been the same for the first five WrestleManias. This was a big departure from what they were used to doing. And Vince McMahon, back then anyway, I mean, clearly he didn't really like, he wasn't a huge fan of doing babyface against babyface because we rarely ever saw it. You know, I think that goes back to the early 80s when they were doing something like that with Pedro Morales and Bruno Sammartino, I think at Shea Stadium. And I don't think the show drew very well, and that really soured them. I don't know about Vince Sr., but certainly Vince Jr., it soured him on this whole idea that, hey, we got to put two fan favorites in there against each other. So this really was just different in every way in terms of what we were used to seeing up until this point. And this match just felt like the biggest thing in the world. And you were either a Hulk Hogan fan or you were an Ultimate Warrior fan. You couldn't be both. You had to be one or the other. You know, me and my brother, he was more a Warrior fan, I was a Hogan fan. Edge and Christian, they've talked about it. Christian was a Warrior fan, Edge was a Hogan fan. You could see Edge in the crowd at WrestleMania 6 wearing his Hulkamania shirt. The battle lines were drawn. I don't think newer fans can really understand how real this was. If you were a younger fan watching this back in 1990. And so as a match, these two had, I mean, this match was better than it had any right to be. It was better than anybody imagined it could possibly be. The way it was laid out, they would trade spots back and forth. They did the test of strength, of course. They had this one part of the match where the referee got bumped and, you know, one guy got a visual pin, then the other guy got a visual pin, a very close near fall at one point. Hogan kicked out of the Warriors finish, and everybody at that point figures, well, we all know how this ends. He's hulking up. There's only one way this could possibly end. Everybody else who he's ever hulked up against fell, lost to him, although he never did pin Piper until he got to WCW. Did he pin Piper in WCW? I don't even remember if he pinned Piper in WCW. I'm almost sure he must have. Piper, for whatever it was about Piper, I don't know if it was a clause in his contract or what, this guy did not lose via pin very, and not just to Hogan, just in general. Piper was very protected and very selective in terms of who he let beat him. Bret Hart is one of the very few people in WWE to ever pin Roddy Piper. I'm sure it happened, but it didn't happen very often. So people thought, well, Hogan's going to drop the leg and win, that's it. Only didn't quite work out that way. Hogan missed the leg drop. We'd never seen him miss the leg drop before. And then on top of that, Warrior gets the big splash, and he gets the pin. The first time that Hogan has taken a clean pinfall loss in a WWE ring since he won the championship back in 84. This is 6 years later. That's a long time. Putting both belts on the line should have been a dead giveaway that Warrior was going to win this, and probably was a dead giveaway for a lot of people, but not for me. Not for a lot of kids watching that show, and some adults. Because just the mere idea of Hulk Hogan losing in the main event of WrestleMania just did not seem possible. That's why this finish is so shocking, and was so shocking. Not shocking enough I would put it at number one, but it definitely has a place on this list. Maybe you had to have lived through it. Maybe it's sort of hard for newer fans to understand what's so shocking about this. Believe me, this was a very big, shocking thing when it happened to a lot of people. And of course, after the match, Hogan passed the torch, you know, which Earl Hebner nearly ruined when he tried to hand the WWF title to the Warrior Warrior would not accept it. He had the IC title. He wouldn't even look at Hebner trying to hand him the world title because he knew that Hogan was supposed to be the one to present it to him after the match, not Earl Hebner. Nobody clued Hebner in about that. So it ended up back outside the belt, and Hogan had to go outside, and he retrieved the belt, and he got back into the ring with it, handed it to the Warrior, raised his arm. He did the whole passing of the torch deal. Walked off to the ring cart, took that very slow ride in the ring cart down the aisle of the Sky Dome. In his book, Bret Hart claims that backstage, after the match, Hogan, who he liked at the time and was friendly with, said to him, "You watch, Warrior will fail. And Vince is going to be calling me, begging me to come back." So if Bret is to be believed, Hogan knew that very night that the Warrior was not going to succeed, that the Warrior as champion experiment was doomed to fail. Did he play a part in that? Probably. I mean, you know, I think he's even admitted that he did certain things when that match was over to make sure the spotlight was still on him. You know, right down to the TV camera showing Hogan on the cart and showing his reaction and focusing not on the Warrior as much where it really should have been, but you know, why are they still focusing on Hogan? He lost the match. I look at that and look, it was a big deal that Hogan lost, so it's only natural that you're going to focus on his reaction. But yeah, I can believe that. I can believe that Hogan knew when he was still in the ring, raising the guy's hand, that in his mind, this guy's going to fail. This guy's going to fail. Vince is going to put the belt back on me. I give it a year at the most. Now, the other interesting thing about this, and this is where my BS meter starts to go off. This is what Hulk Hogan told Fighting Spirit magazine in 2013. I lifted this one passage here. This is what he said. "Vince McMahon and I were best friends, but when we talked about money, we were enemies. So I went to WCW with the red and yellow. I beat Ric Flair and Hulkamania took off. Then, creatively, I turned into a bad guy, which I always wanted to do in the WWF, but nobody wanted me to. I always said I could be the best bad guy ever. Just let me do it. But nobody wanted me to be the bad guy. At Warrior's time, I really wanted to fuck him as a bad guy. I wanted to beat the Ultimate Warrior in Toronto, but as a heel. I just thought it would be intense, and I would be the best bad guy ever. I could have done it and then said, forget the prayers and vitamins, I did it for the money. But it's just creative differences, and Vince knows what he's doing, believe me. I just wanted to try something different in WWE." First of all, I could have done without the image of Hulk Hogan fucking the Ultimate Warrior as a bad guy. I don't care if he wants to fuck him as a good guy or a bad guy. I don't need that mental image. Second of all, I don't believe him. I don't believe him. He had to be dragged in WCW by his own admission, kicking and screaming by Eric Bischoff to turn heel in 1996 when he was clearly past his expiration date when it came to being a babyface. Kicking and screaming. In 96, he had to be dragged. In 90, he was still selling merch. He was still the top babyface in wrestling. You kidding me? He was getting older. Vince wanted to make a new star. So they tried with the Warrior. It didn't work. But the idea that Hulk Hogan, all he wanted to do in 1990 was turn heel. He pitched the idea. He wanted to do it. Vince said, no, I don't buy that. Then last year, he did another interview, this time with Bill Apter. And he talked about wanting to be a heel after WrestleMania 6. He said, "I was on the fence about turning heel in WCW. But the Hollywood Hogan character, man, that was something I wanted to do after WrestleMania 6 with the Ultimate Warrior. I went to Vince, and I said," and I swear this is his quote, okay? This is straight from Hogan. This is what he said. He said, "I went to Vince, and I said, I want to be Triple H, Hollywood Hulk Hogan. I want to turn heel." And Vince went, "No, man, you can't turn heel. There's no way it would work. I wanted to walk away from the ring, hand Warrior the belt, look up to God, leave the ring, get halfway down the aisle, and then turn around and go back, I guess, to attack the Warrior. That's what I wanted to do, but Vince had other plans." He wanted to be Triple H before there was even a Triple H. I wonder what Triple H thinks about that. I love these little stories and these little anecdotes. I'd never heard that one before, by the way. So that one was pretty funny, I have to say. I hope Chris Hemsworth is listening. I want all of these stories covered in the Hulk Hogan movie that he's doing. Next week, we break into the top five, which means that we are getting very close to WrestleMania, since we are counting down to WrestleMania Sunday on April 7th. So that'll be next week. And also, don't forget to RSVP on the Facebook invite if you are either going to or think you might be able to attend our WrestleMania weekend meetup, the Sound Off the Wagon meetup, Friday, April 5th, starting at 2 p.m. at the King's Beer Hall, just a few blocks away from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. It is a public invite, so feel free to invite friends. You know, the more the merrier. They're more than welcome to attend. But RSVP if you can. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster, if you want to chime in on that little trivia question. Try to win those two gold VIP passes to the Kevin Nash shenanigans party. You got to be the first to tweet me the answer. So at Solomonster is the place to follow me. I will be back for a brand new podcast next Sunday. That is episode 589. We got Fastlane coming up, so we'll do Fastlane predictions. I'll try to get those up early if I can, maybe a day or two earlier on YouTube. But if not, they'll definitely be part of the show next Sunday. Another pay-per-view. This is such an unnecessary show. But anyway, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and I will see you back here next Sunday for more Sound Up. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
You know what annoyed me more than anything else on this show last Monday night? Instead of just calling it Fastlane, they called it WWE Fastlane.
At WWE Fastlane, I'm going to beat you.
Drove me nuts.
You and I are going to have a match at WWE Fastlane.
All night with this. Who talks like that? If aliens landed on Earth and attempted to engage a member of the WWE roster in a conversation, you know what they would think? Holy shit, these creatures are stupid. And then they would exterminate every last one of us.
The Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.